Good morning. We are here this morning at our Neighborhood and Quality of Life Committee meeting, July 15th at 8:30. Joining us today, we have Vice Mayor Samulin, Commissioners Minor and Gongora. I will make a quick announcement. Due to the public health emergency caused by the coronavirus, we are authorized to have these meetings held virtually. So if you'd like to participate, join the meeting by visiting Zoom app on your smart device or at the web at zoom.com. You can also call us at 929-205-6099 or toll free at 888-475-4499. The webinar ID is 847-077-8817. It's all on the MiamiBeachFL.gov website under this item for the agenda. Anybody who would like to speak on today's, any of the items that we bring forward, just raise your hand icon on the Zoom or call in and press star 9 and we will do our best to get to you. So with that, I have a couple quick announcements. Item number 4 has been withdrawn. We're also going to take some items a little bit out of order due to some requests. Eric, before I begin, do you have any announcements?
Other than item 4, no, ma'am.
Okay, so we're going to start off. Oh, we also have a hard stop today. We're scheduled to go to 11:30. Should we end up going over that, 12 o'clock today is the DRB already pre-advertised and scheduled meeting. So we have a hard stop well before that so that they can get situated. With that, we're going to begin with the request to do number 3, Commissioner Samulin. I think you wanted to discuss the North Beach Regional Parking Plan this morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. Just a little bit of background before I turn over to the city administration. You know, this really has been driven by my sense that in the community in North Beach that parking is an important concern. And it's an issue that they want addressed. At the same time, we have a couple major projects coming down the road, Ocean Terrace, 72nd Street, which the voters approved in the GEO bond. Thankfully, the city administration had recently engaged Walker to do a consulting analysis of parking. So what has come forward from this work is a couple things, and I think it's important if we take them in two groups. There appears to be an immediate opportunity to increase 22 spots in North Beach. And we could, I think, move forward very quickly, and I hope that that's something we can focus on. At the same time, the administration has put together some planning ideas as to how do we deal, what do we do when 72nd Street's not around? What do we do to help the community and the public on a temporary basis when Ocean Terrace loses some space? I just want to highlight that I want this to be a very community-driven process. I appreciate, Madam Chair, that you put this first. I wanted to, you know, make it clear to the community that there was a time certain. We had a very productive meeting with the community. I believe a couple of my colleagues were at the meeting and represented on Monday. And we look forward to having a good dialogue, hearing from the community and this committee. With that, I'd like to recognize Saul and see if he could tee up the specifics.
Saul, you're on.
Good morning, everyone. So thank you, Commissioner Samulin, for that introduction. Just a little bit more detail on the background here. So when the 72nd Street Civic Complex project commences, and this is estimated to be in March of 2022, we will lose, we'll lose 313 parking spaces that are in the lot currently while under construction. And then on the Ocean Terrace development and the construction of the park there, at some point we'll lose about 60 spaces there. So cumulatively, at some point concurrently, we'll be down about 380 spaces or so in that general area. So again, that prompted our review of trying to come up with some strategies of being able to find some interim parking and temporary parking solutions while that construction is taking place. So as Commissioner Samuel identified, there is one opportunity which, quite frankly, could happen immediately, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be temporary. It could potentially be in long term in perpetuity, because, quite frankly, it's conversion of parallel parking to angled parking, which yields an additional 22 spaces. Our colleagues over in Transportation and Mobility Department did a survey of the area, and they looked at 75th Street to 85th Street and from Collins west to Dickens. And while a lot of those areas and blocks are already angled, there were some opportunities that were identified, again, that would yield 22 parking spaces. So perhaps at the end of the discussion, if there's some direction to perhaps move that forward, if that's the will of the committee, that's something that could be done fairly quickly. I'm sure that the transportation will need to have some conversations with the county since we're changing the flow of traffic there potentially with the angled and so forth, but that should be a fairly expedited process. Moving towards the other three strategies, we did engage Walker Consultants and National Parking Consultant that they're very reputable, and they provided a number of strategies and recommendations on how to deal with this temporary loss of parking. So one is the concept of a shared use agreement with private properties. So as we know, there are a number of private parking facilities in the area that serve private concerns there and private businesses. And there are opportunities there potentially for underutilized parking to be utilized as public parking under this shared use agreement strategy. So essentially how that works is the city would negotiate an agreement with that private property owner or private operator and be able to provide a number of those spaces for public use as if it were a municipal parking lot. Now, the key there is that we'll work with our planning department to determine which one of those have underutilized parking. There's a process to be able to determine that. And the best example I can use is a bank. So a bank is open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and during the hours that they're open, the required parking is required for their use. But during the off hours at nights and weekends, that could potentially be public parking for the public to use. So that's one strategy. Secondly, we have a valet parking option, which we plan to use turn some of these parking lots into a valet storage, including an option that I'm going to talk in a little bit about, a temporary lot up in on 86th Street. Essentially using those as valet storage. Valet would be, the rates would be commensurate with what residents, the resident discount that they receive now, which would be the equivalent of a dollar an hour. There would be like a flat rate for valet during weekdays and during weekends. But again, that would yield an efficiency of about 30% by using the valet option and storage as opposed to self-park. We would certainly provide that valet stands in that corridor along 72nd Street and 73rd Street and so forth. That is yet to be identified, the specific locations, but essentially there would be a valet service in that area, and then storage would be at either some of the parking lots or perhaps this vacant lot option that I'm going to talk about in just a minute. So again, valet, certainly a good option for us. It's the highest level of services in the menu of options for parking, and certainly would be, I think, a nice added benefit for this period and could be utilized. Last but not least, it's the temporary parking lot option, which is the city has in the west lots north of 85th. There are two vacant lots. They're currently grass or dirt, and they have trees in them and so forth. One of them could potentially be converted into a temporary parking lot where there would be some surface established with either gravel or limestone, compacted limestone or gravel, and then an area, a small area that would be paved for ADA accessibility to be able to provide and meet that requirement. But essentially, it would be for the term of whatever the construction period is. It's not intended to be a long-term solution. It's intended just to serve the purpose of being able to provide the valet storage that I just talked about a minute ago, as well as some options for self-parking. There were some suggestions that came through on the Zoom call that we had a couple of days ago regarding this issue from the residents in the area. And they had some good suggestions regarding potentially allowing some use of that vacant lot, or that temporary lot, I should say, for resident use at night and so forth. And that's certainly something that we're open to and can pursue further. So at the end of the day, I can't stress enough, and I think that's one of the concerns that came through, was that this was perhaps perceived as a the use of that lot as being permanent and converted to something, some other use and so forth. This, again, is a temporary solution for being able to provide some parking, some supplemental parking while the construction is underway. And then it would revert back to its original state, and we would remove the lime rock and so forth and bring it back to its original state. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Thank you so much, Saul, for that very good comprehensive summary. Commissioner Samulin, this is your item. I was going to open it up to my colleagues for any questions or thoughts before we open it up to the public. Any final words before I do that?
Nope, that sounds great.
The opportunity, of course, again after.
Thank you.
Commissioners Gongora or Minor, do you have any thoughts at this time before I open it up? Yes, Commissioner Minor.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, just some questions. Thank you for the presentation. I appreciate that. On the shared use agreements, potential shared use agreements with private partnership, any estimation as to how many spots we can gain from that usage?
Commissioner, we're not quite there yet. We've looked at a couple of different properties that we want to have conversations with about starting that dialogue. There are several that we've identified that have potential. I don't have a hard number for you yet, but we can certainly provide updates on that as we progress.
Okay. Yeah, that would be useful to know. Also, I'm picturing how this is going to play out with the valet, and I appreciate the creativity in coming up with a number of ideas. I think there it gives a number of various options, but I'm picturing the valet option, and I'm wondering could that negatively impact our businesses if people know they're going to have to give a car to someone, have to wait for it to come back, if they just want to run in for a quick bite or a quick shopping spree. Has there been any study or any evaluation of the potential impact on the businesses in that area?
So perhaps to provide some clarity on the options. So whatever curbside parking is certainly available, it will remain available in the area. And we also have a parking lot at 75th and Collins right behind the library. That will have some availability as well. And perhaps we encourage the short-term uses, so that quick cup of coffee or lunch and so forth, if it's a short-term, perhaps through messaging and just disseminating information, we encourage that short-term parking perhaps take place at those curbside spaces and the surface lot and so forth. And perhaps the valet usage, that might be for longer term, perhaps maybe some longer term usage if someone's going to the beach, that type of a scenario. Or, of course, they're certainly welcome to use the valet option, even if it's for a short term use. It's certainly up to the user. So we've worked very closely with the business community up there and committed that during that construction process, we're going to monitor it very closely. And it's from soup to nuts. It's not just the user parking or patron parking, it's loading activities, so freight loading zones, and making sure that the businesses have opportunities and there's ample opportunity to be able to provide their goods and services and their support through the freight loading zone program. Of course, these options here to be able for their patrons. And then, of course, even for recreational uses, so whether it be the park or the beach and so forth, that we have parking availability there.
Has there been any consideration as to making sort of the street parking actually limiting the amount of time you could park there? So it'll sort of almost force the long-term parking to use valet?
So that's our strategy. It's kind of a soft implementation where it's not strictly enforced. The time limits through our Park Mobile app and up until recently through our pay stations, typically on street is a 2 to 3 hour maximum, which is that short term period to be able to provide, again, some turnover of those spaces. Typically our off street lots, so our metered lots and our garages, those offer longer term. Typically in metered lots, it could be anywhere between 6 and 10 hours, again, for longer term utilization. But it's a soft approach. There's not a hard enforcement on that. We can certainly look at that, and that's what really creates the turnover, is when you start to get that enforcement. because you could extend your parking stay. So if you're at a 2 hour parking space, you could extend your stay beyond that 2 hours. But if we put a hard stop on it and not allow extending that 2 hour period, then maybe perhaps that's one way of handling that and encouraging that turnover and perhaps the valet use.
Okay, just two follow-up questions, if I may.
Sure.
Well, different issues. On the Ocean Terrace has a required parking requirement. Can you just describe that briefly? What that is exactly?
So I don't have that right in front of me right now. And maybe I'll defer to Eric if he's available, and he might have more detail on that.
Sure, I can jump in. The development agreement has a requirement that the development team cover any shortfall or losses related to the valet service in the 75th Street lot and potentially the 8010 lot. up to $100,000, and I believe it's during the construction period for phase one of their project. So we wouldn't implement until they started construction on their project. And then once we did, we would have any losses covered up to $100,000.
Okay, thank you. And last question, how many spots when you're this, the West Lots component of this proposal, how many parking spaces are you envisioning?
So they're existing in the four surface lots that are existing. They're metered lots. There are about 300 parking spaces among those. In this option for the temporary lot and conversion of this vacant lot into a temporary lot, we're estimating somewhere around 150, 200 spaces could be garnered. Now, remember, there are some trees that are within the vacant lot and so forth. We're not touching those. Those trees will remain in place. So we'll have to do workarounds among those, whatever trees are in there and so forth. So that eats into some of the efficiencies we might be able to garner. But we're estimating somewhere between 150 and 200 spaces that we could potentially add to the inventory.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good questions, Commissioner Gongora.
Sure. I don't mind deferring. I see a couple of hands raised from the public. I do have some comments, but I don't mind holding them until we've heard from them.
Great. With that, I will open it up to the public. Those who are calling in will have 2 minutes to speak. And now I've been told Kevin will be the timekeeper. So our first caller is Mr. Roberts. Good morning.
My four most favorite commissioners on this committee. Wonderful. I just want to say that, you know, going forward, I think this is a telltale sign of what we need to accomplish going forward in planning. And that is, we're impacting the quality of life of citizens at the benefit of developers to an extent where, you know, it's unfair. So, you know, the West Lots are loved by that community up there, as far as I know, from talking to people in North Beach. And turning it into a surface lot isn't really ideal. And this isn't temporary. The losses of spots here are forever. And it sounds like, you know, we're getting pushed around to make developers richer and valet companies richer at the expense of residents. And going forward, I would hope you for, like, defend the residents against, you know, over-density, you know, making sure that development is happening. Capitalism is good, but it's within the reason and the use of this small island effectively. And I love you for it. And I thank you for this opportunity to talk. Thank you.
Thank you. Next caller is Mr. Green. Good morning. Jared Green, you're on.
You have to unmute yourself.
Mr. Green? Well, we'll have to come back to Mr. Green. Our next caller is Ms. Jones. Carolina, you're on.
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you.
Okay, great. Sorry about that. Okay. Thank you for taking this item up. I have to say that I was on the call on Monday and I had missed the earliest part of the presentation. So I listened to a lot of the comments of the people who were concerned. And now after hearing this item be teed up again, I'm completely confused because what I understand from Saul is that this is temporary parking to replace what we're going to be losing while the 72nd Street project is being built and or the Ocean Terrace project is being built for residents, not for construction crews. So if you guys could first, you know, address that and confirm that this is parking for residents, that would be great. And then secondly, I just want to say that obviously, our residents are going to need a place to park. The lots north of 85th and 86th have always been used as overflow parking. I live off of 85th. I drive up that street every day. And depending on what movie was filming or what art Basel was in town or what project was happening, those lots have been used for parking. From time to time, it is a dirt slash grass field that nobody uses. So for somebody to say, oh, we cherish those lots. Well, what do you cherish them for? They serve absolutely no purpose right now, except to hold a spot for whatever might be, you know, their best, and highest use at a later date. So I'm 100% in support of this. I think it's great that we're thinking forward. And providing residents a place to park while these two projects that were overwhelming.
Thank you. Your time has elapsed.
Okay. Thank you. Our next caller is Mr. Gaitia.
Hi, Commissioner. Thank you so much for the city being proactive. Just to follow Carolina's comments, I want to make it clear this is a city project to redo the 72nd Street lot. That is the only parking for that commercial district is very critical. I most certainly support the West lots. It is the closest place to replace that efficient parking. I think we need to think about the local circulator being committed to transporting people from the West lots into the commercial district while that happens. I certainly want the city to focus on private partnerships. There is such an underutilization of vacant lots in Town Center at this time and on 74th Street. And I most certainly feel that's something that can be utilized. There's also a parking garage on 67th Street that is completely closed that would most certainly provide an efficient parking. So I think those should be the areas of focus. In regards to angled parking, I just want to remind Parking Department to work with the Transportation Department to ensure that there's no bicycle lanes within those streets that go east-west. If they are, the angled parking would not allow for a bicycle lane to be formally introduced. So please just make sure you touch base with transportation to ensure there's no planned bicycle lanes where you're looking to go into angled parking. But thank you very much for taking on this item.
Thank you. Betsy Perez, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you? I just want to say I'm in support of this. I think it's a great plan, and I thank you all for your comprehensive work and study in this regard. I 100% support it. I'm not sure how the community has turned this into a developer benefit. From what I understand, and if I'm understanding everything that you've outlined, this is for the public's benefit. It's for the public to be able to park while these construction projects are taking place. So I think you're doing a great job. I really appreciate it. And I think that it's smart to look ahead and to plan ahead. And I just want to say I voice my total support in it, and I look forward to these projects coming to fruition and the North Beach benefiting from it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Anybody else before I close and go back to the commission? All right. I don't see any hands up. Am I missing anybody? Just Kevin or Eric, do you see anybody? I want to make sure I get everybody.
I don't see anybody with their hands up.
Okay. Nope. With that, we'll close the public comment portion right now. And Commissioner Congore, I see your hands up.
Yes, thank you. Now, I wanted to hear from the public. I wasn't able to attend the public Zoom meeting, so I was curious to hear as much public commentary as possible. For me, the best part about this item is that we have until March 2022, if I heard correctly, before we start construction. So we have some time to figure this issue out. I think the red alert that kind of went out through the community is there's always a concern when something happens on the West Lots, that the West Lots will lose their passive purpose as a park or some other very like low intensity use. And I understand the community that is concerned because I hate to bring this up, but you know, they kind of lost the log cabin from one day to the next. The log cabin has gone into Never Never Land. I don't know what's ever going to happen with that again. And I think the concern is once you open up the West Lots and start using them as a park facility, that their passive use may also go into Never Never Land. So we have to figure out the best solution for the community. I believe I was the most vocal person during the discussions of this 72nd Street facility, as well as the Ocean Terrace, on raising the loss of parking and the loss of parking that we were going to face from development. And I think the way that this ties into development is we also reduced parking requirements for all of the projects in the North Beach Town Center to get built, with the excuse being they're going to be able to park in the 72nd Street lot. So there is a tie-in to development there, and there is a concern. With that said, we've got to figure this out. As of today, I'm not in favor of using the West Lot as an option. I am in favor of the other items discussed, but they're not going to get us there. The angle parking will create 22 spaces for me. That's a no-brainer. We need to move forward with that today. Number two, clearly Ocean Terrace needs to fulfill their contractual obligations with whatever valet parking that they are required to provide. Number three, I think that as part of a motion today, we need to aggressively pursue a potential shared use agreement with whatever private parking facilities we have, as well as maybe look and see if we have some other public lots. And I believe there are some four small lots identified in the item that could serve as parking. And that you need to come back to us in a few months and let us know what this looks like. I think Commissioner Minor asked how many more parking spaces would this create, and nobody really knows today. The West Lots are also problematic in my mind. I am a Miami Beach person, and I will tell you, I will not valet park on what is the absolute last option available. I will circle and circle and circle around and look for on-street parking. And that's how Miami Beach natives are. We don't like valet parking. We don't, Mickey's laughing because you know it's true. We don't like parking in garages. We don't like valet parking. So all of these wonderful solutions that we talk about, we don't like them. I understand they may be the wave of the future and I will go along with them, but our residents don't love them. And when you talk about taking out a parking lot on 72nd Street and thinking that people are going to go up between 84th and 86th Street, 12 to 14 blocks away, to park to go get my cafecito at Manolo's, to park to go get my pastry at Moises Bakery, or to have breakfast at Sazon, or to get my manicure at Venetian, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. And I don't think that people are going to do it. So I don't think it's also a realistic answer. And I know that the response from the administration is going to be, well, they're going to park there and they're going to take the trolley. Some will, but a lot won't. So I think we need to keep the West Lots as a last resort, and we need to really buckle down and focus on these other solutions and figure out how many parking spaces those will create and bring this back.
Thank you for that very animated comment. Okay. You know, and I, listen, when these items have come in front of us in general, I've also been, you know, an advocate and concerned about the potential lack of parking that could be a result of what we do. And so we try to find that balance of how we best move everything forward. And I think you broke it down into four different areas. And Commissioner Samuelin, as the sponsor of this item, I'd like to see where you'd like us to go. But I think one thing for sure, when it comes to the shared use the private-public partnerships potential. It's all, if we need to understand what that looks like. And so until you go out and see what that looks like, we don't know really how many parking spaces we have to work with. Is that correct?
Correct. We would need to identify what those potential locations, where they are, and what parking capacity they may have.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Minor, any final thoughts before I give it to Commissioner Samulin to give us kind of where he'd like to see this go today?
No, I'm okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Samulin?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the public and my colleagues for very thoughtful comments. Here's what I think we should do today. What I would like from this body is if we could bifurcate the 22 spaces, I think, frankly, are a no-brainer. Transportation's been involved. Let's, if this is the will of this body, if we could get that to the full commission and do that yesterday, you know, I'd really like to fast-track that. That is good news, no cost. I think,
Commissioner, I want to interrupt you, but yeah. Do we have a moment for that? Let's just do that by acclamation.
Yes.
Okay, next.
Wonderful. Now, I think the rest of this should be brought back to this committee. I started with I wanted a community-driven process, so let's do that. Let's make sure we're addressing the community issues. I want to be clear that the intent here is to help residents. These projects have been approved, and we need to do something about that. Thankfully, as Commissioner Gongora pointed out, we have some time to work with it. So I think it is appropriate that we pursue these shared lots, the ones the administration brought forward, as well as some of the ones the community brought forward. I think it is appropriate too that, you know, if we don't need the West lots, that we wouldn't go there. But indeed, if we do, that we only do that once it is clear these projects are proceeding forward and that we have clear exits. For example, we could have in the construction contract that someone would have to rebuild and put them back to their natural use. So I understand the community concerns, but I think they can be addressed. And what I would just ask is that the administration take the feedback from Monday, the feedback today. And Saul, when would you want to bring this back? When do you think you'd have some feedback as it relates to the shared lots and how that's shaping up?
I think it's probably reasonable in the September-October timeframe. That should give us enough time to be able to do some outreach and come back at least with some potential opportunities.
Yes.
When was that?
September-October at the pleasure of the committee.
Why don't we do October? Because we want to make sure you have time to figure it all out and bring back a comprehensive plan for us.
I'm fine with that.
That's fine. You have direction. Saul, when it comes to the shared use, the public private potential, right now it's a very interesting time because you know, looking at parking utilization during a pandemic is very different from, you know, what was pre-pandemic and what we could be expecting and seeing in the future. And so we might be able to have different agreements in place, almost in phasing, you know, what something may look like at this point versus that point. So if you could just, I can talk to you offline about some of that, but if you could bring us back almost not just what potential spots there are, but how you envision what it's going to be like potentially. I mean, it's hard. We don't have a crystal ball, but what you think maybe for negotiations from the city to benefit the city and its residents, maybe we could have a better deal in place because of the situation, not to take advantage of the situation, but it could be an opportunity for everybody to be a win-win.
Certainly. Thank you. Will do.
All right. Anything else on this item? We're going to move on to the next item. All right. Thank you so much for that. We're going to be actually, is Maria Ruiz on? Because we have two items that are back-to-back with Maria. We're going to take the affordable housing number two. Commissioner Gongora, this is your item.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll cue it up. And I actually have a similar kind of companion piece that's floating through the Land Use Committee as well. But before I turn it over to Maria, my big concern is always that people are being priced out of living in Miami Beach. And during this moment in time where we are in kind of a
development boom, that we need to figure out how we can also create other avenues of housing to make sure that our city maintains its unique flavor and that all people from all socioeconomic backgrounds can afford to live here. Maria has prepared a nice strategy piece with different things that are going on in different jurisdictions, some of which we can do legally in Florida, some of which we cannot. But the sad part about, which is contained in the conclusion, is through all of these talks and all of these policy changes and plans we've made over the past many years, we've literally only created 5 new units of affordable housing. And that was when we acquired the 5-unit property at 795 81st Street. So we're going to have to get very serious. I believe Commissioner Samuelin is co-sponsoring with me a ballot question on the Marina Park to use funds from that, if it should pass, to help create more affordable housing. Because I really think the future is either A, we got to have more money to buy more land and build it, or B, we have to do something similar to what Miami did, and that we have to start mandating it when a development needs something from the city, when they need more height, when they need a change in setbacks or something else. I don't think that Florida law allows us to just mandate it as a matter of right, but I defer to the city attorney's office on that. I do think also that in the land use committee that Tom Mooney has been charged with bringing back some real specific ideas in September. And I suspect this will be more of a discussion and get deferred because it should probably move on the same timeline as that. So with that said, I turn it over to Maria.
And my apologies, we were just kicked out of our building. So I'm just trying to get back to my notes. We had a little situation here this morning. I think one of the challenges that we continue to have, and I think the commissioner has touched upon it, and we've done it, we've discussed it several times before, is the fact that while our prices on our land continues to grow, although there's limited land on top of that, our monies that we have historically used for the purpose of acquiring and rehabbing units for affordable purposes has continued to dwindle. And then on the top of this, just in this pandemic alone, every one of our dollars has been redirected towards rent assistance during this difficult time. And that amount, as you can see, it doesn't touch the surface of the rent, and it limits how many units we could have fixed, even if the money was allocated for that purpose. One of the challenges that Miami is trying to do in its plan is creating a dedicated funding source that they've committed to provide seed money for loans for the purposes of being able to develop properties. That's obviously something that we can consider. The issue is going to be what is the funding source that we would tap into and at what amount, because we're looking at very expensive housing costs in terms of acquiring and rehabbing. Right now, I think that the home limit is about $230,000 per unit. And we've had some difficulty keeping within that, even in the acquisition of the 5 units that we purchased at the Coral Sands Apartments that we acquired. We barely made it through, even under those conditions. So I think that you're right, Ms. Commissioner, more has to be done. The issue is going to be money in order to do that. The $225 million that had been set aside from the housing trust funds has been put on hold by the governor. We do not know if that money is going to be released, and if so, if the conditions of them change. Our allocation under that award is one of the largest ones we've had in a while, which is just over $600,000. If that puts perspective, that would be less than 3 units that we would be able to acquire just with that allocation for the full year. So clearly, I think the facts of the economy are pretty straightforward. The issue is going to be where would we get the money and how much of it can realistically be input into the marketplace in an effective manner?
Thank you, Maria. First of all, Maria, I hope everybody's okay. I don't know what transpired this morning, but it sounds like, are you guys okay?
We're okay. It's just been that kind of year for us so far. So,
okay. So with that, Commissioner Gongora, your hand is still up. You said you had an item at land use. Do you want us, what is that item exactly entailing?
It's a companion item about land use regulations. This one, I think, is focused more on funding, but I think that they are tied together.
I think what I would like to do is defer this item until after the land use item is heard in September and have this come back on the very next neighborhood agenda.
Okay, I'm good with that. Colleagues, any comments? No. Yeah, Commissioner Samuelin, please.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. And as Commissioner Gongora properly and correctly stated, I am a co-sponsor of an item that would take some piece of the funds from the marina project, if it is the will of the voters, and dedicate it to this need. This is a very important need. And, you know, if we don't have the funding, we're not going to move the needle. My own input on a couple of related points, as I look at the list, I do think the inclusionary zoning is something that probably warrants a more detailed explanation. That is something that other municipalities have had success with. Perhaps as people, as Commissioner Gongora said, look for extra height or look for things, easements and things that we've been, you know, reasonable accommodating. Maybe part of that accommodation could be for inclusionary zoning. I also, the next time we discuss this, would love to get a sense of magnitude of the demand, both from an affordable and a workforce standpoint. We're clearly not meeting that demand at all, but I'd like to know, how many folks are we talking about here? What does this need look like? My hypothesis is that we can do better and we can do more and we should. That said, the demand is gonna way outstrip what we're able to do. And so I just think it also circles back to that we need to be addressing transportation, because there are going to be a lot of folks that are not yet going to live here, and that still will remain a priority. But I appreciate my colleague putting this forward. I look forward to continuing the discussion.
Yeah, good comments. All right, so Eric, make sure we bring this back after land use has had a chance to come up with the zoning ordinances that they're going to be hopefully putting in place potentially, and seeing what that looks like, and then we can have the comprehensive discussion here thereafter. Okay, thank you. And then Maria, since you're there, and then we'll let you go because I think you only have one other item. Let me just make sure there's no one from the public that wanted to speak on that item. I do see a couple hands up really quickly. This is about affordable housing, and then we're going to go into homeless. So, Mr. Roberts, you're on. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you again. I'm concerned that, you know, the idea of affordable housing is a really good one, a noble one. But, you know, applying that question on the ballot seems to me to be trying to persuade the public to vote yes and not really to address affordable housing, because I don't know how much money would be attributable to affordable housing, but I would imagine it would be rather limited. We have to, you know, address this in a major way and utilizing our land, public land, to give to developers rather than developing it for affordable housing, I think is a bad public policy. So that's first point. The second point is, I don't know if, you know, the policies lately in terms of utilizing taxes or income from the city is being applied to things, you know, arbitrarily. So like, I don't know if I'm using the right acronym, but I think it's CRA, North Beach CRA, takes away the money from the general funds that we need to, you know, pay our expenses. And this is another example where, you know, we're sort of pulling away the money from our need to deal with everyday expenses of the city. So those are my two concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. Next caller, Mr. Bakia.
Hi, good morning, commissioners. I currently chair the Affordable Housing Advisory Committee for the City of Miami Beach, and we certainly have had a lot of discussions at our meetings about affordable housing and the important need for us to plan for affordable housing in the near future. I do want to remind us that our CRA was just approved in North Beach, and we most certainly need to focus on ensuring that the CRA plan includes an affordable housing project in Town Center where we can develop a high density of units and get an appropriate unit count. I certainly feel we missed an opportunity when we had the past ordinance regarding FAR and having a discussion about an FAR bonus and density bonus for affordable housing projects, as many other cities do in our state. But I certainly support the need and the urgency for us to move forward with some real affordable housing and true density, where you can get a good amount of units to, you know, fulfill this demand. So I appreciate the many fronts everyone's taking on this, and hopefully we can keep it moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for those comments. All right, no more hands are up. So we are going to now move on to the next item.
Can I say one more comment, please?
Of course.
Thank you. I did raise my hand electronically. Okay, no, just two quick points. I just took it down. Two quick points I wanted to make. Daniel, if you could also please work this issue through the Affordable Housing Advisory Committee, and I would ask our administration to share whatever materials they prepare for land use and neighborhoods on this issue with the Affordable Housing Advisory Committee as well, because we welcome an extra set of eyes on this issue, and I know that you worked hard on it. And number two, I also wanted to point out that it's my understanding that the government is now going to require a member of the commission to serve on the Affordable Housing Advisory Committee, and I'm going to be sponsoring an ordinance to follow with law in that regard. I don't know who the mayor will want, but I would be happy to work with the committee, because affordable housing is something that I'm very committed to and believe in very strongly.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. We're good? Okay. Next item we're going to do is the, Maria, oh, there you are, is the homeless item. Commissioner Minor, this is your item, discussing possible ways to improve the homeless issue on Miami Beach. I know we're going to also be maybe having this discussion Friday at our meeting, but Commissioner Minor, you have the floor.
Thank you, and I'll be brief. I think everyone realizes that we have an issue, and it's only increased. I will mention, and it made the news, there was actually a homeless person who attacked two women with a rock. Luckily, none of them were hurt. They were he's actually being charged with a hate crime. They were both African American, so he's still in jail. But I raised that because actually it's someone who I had passed many, many times on the street, and I know it's difficult. I know there's tough situations with our legal system, and I don't say this to fault blame, but this was a person that everyone literally crossed the street when they saw, just someone you knew that it was just a matter of time. And so I've spoken with our police chief, and actually I know Marie is going to discuss, but I'd also like to open it up to Chief Clements, because I've spoken with him, and I understand the police department is making an increased effort to handle the situation, and really, because it's a quality of life issue, but there are crimes being committed. There are infractions that we need to enforce better to make sure that our residents aren't being terrorized. And not everyone is terrorizing residents. I don't mean to put every homeless person in the same bucket, but some are, and it has to end. It has to. We can't have our residents literally crossing the street to get away from a problem over and over again. And I'm hearing it consistently. And the shame is, because, you know, this is not, it's I almost sound like, you know, sometimes when I talk about it, I feel like I'm being a little callous. But this is a situation where Maria and her team have made so many efforts of outreach. We have beds. We spend an incredible amount of money. We spend over $500,000 a year on shelters, which are available, but often are mostly are turned away and turned down. And, you know, there's only so much assistance and help we can give before we actually have to enforce, because otherwise our quality of life will continue to deteriorate. So I would like to hear from Marie and also the chief about the measures being taken.
Thank you. And thank you for placing this item. Maria.
Thank you, Commissioner. And it just so happens that I have the file for the gentleman you're referring to. And he goes back to 2014, and we placed him in shelter last year. And for the past, after we placed him in shelter, he kind of disappeared. He wasn't here, but he did show up in Miami. We even gave him two food cards before the incident happened. Obviously, this the problem has I think magnified during the pandemic. what is hard to explain is that when you have a pandemic where the order is for people to stay sheltered, stay safer at home, to not migrate in groups of larger than 10, we're actually seeing the exact opposite. We had an incident a couple of weeks ago with our staff when they were distributing the food cards. There were 20 homeless people, only one of whom had a mask. And as we're distributing the food cards and reminding people about the masks and trying to hand those out, a fight broke out. This is not something that we are prepared for. Our civilian staff is there to offer services, and we're still doing that despite the fact that our shelter environment's becoming more challenging. Obviously, even the steps we have to take here at the office, one of the reasons why we were kind of locked down this morning is because we had a potential situation with an employee. The reality of this pandemic really has brought home that the issues and the behavioral problems that are driving the complaints about the homeless still remain. Whether it's the complaints from the decoupage that they have people who are drinking and taking drugs in front of their building, or the people who are congregating at Lincoln Road. At the end of the day, we have offered every one of those people on multiple occasions shelter, ID, relocation, jobs, treatment, both mental health and addiction. Everything that a human service agency can put at the table has been put on the table. At some point, we have to realize that human services can only work when a person says, I'll take them. And that's been our challenge. Our placements for shelter have been reduced by 50% since the pandemic start. Our relocation requests have gone down by 50% since the pandemic start. But our homeless population has increased by more than 50% in that same time frame. Those are the facts. And our team continues to do outreach. We continue to have a walk-in center. City of Miami sent its team home at noon this week. We're still out here putting in full days. I don't know what else we could do. I know that we're fatigued. I know that we're challenged. But quite frankly, I don't know what else to do, because from a human services perspective, this city is offering every service with the exception of mental health services on an on-demand basis. And we were notified this week that the Lazarus program, which is our mental health component, is off for 2 weeks because of quarantine. So we will have zero mental health services available, at least for the next 2 weeks. So this pandemic definitely has made our job that much harder.
Chief.
Good morning. And I hear the frustration in Maria's voice. Obviously, I know that because I know that they are very diligent in going out and offering the services that they can. We're supplementing that now even more so. We sent Sergeant Barry and his crew out this morning. You know, the focus really for the most part for them over the past couple of weeks is just getting people to be able to go ahead and adhere to this component. I can tell you that you know, with what I've seen and what I've heard with the recent census that's gone out there, we redirect the Sergeant Barry and his crew to start doing the homeless outreach missions on their part again. And really on our objective at that point is to keep the pressure on them to get to actually move into these locations as they become available, but moreover to deal with the quality of life issues that they've been presenting to us on not only on Lincoln Road and the 100 block of Lincoln Road, but also the other various parts of the city. We also now want to expand that to where it's not just a one team effort, but we want to establish up another side, an alternative team, if you will, a team that's going to be here when Sergeant Barry's crew is not, so that we keep the pressure on. That's one of the goals that we have over the next couple of weeks in being able to go ahead and obviously deal with the problems presented by the homeless. It didn't help, you know, when COVID was at its height that, you know, that there were certain encampments that were shut down on the other side of the bridge that really caused a homeless, for lack of a better term, homeless migration, you know, to the South Beach area. I don't know that they're all there. Maria would have more information on that than I would. But we've seen it. But not only did we see it in the numbers, but we also saw it in many of the people who are coming over here were extremely aggressive towards law enforcement, even though you know, really for the most part, we were there to offer a helping hand, if you will, you know, and again, the resistance and, you know, coupled with everything else that's going on. And it's not just the pandemic. I think it's just that it's the era around the attitude of people that are coming over here as well, to include the homeless. So this past couple of days, we went ahead and we reevaluated our approach. And we put out a plan. Commissioners, you may have seen it in the LTC that we just submitted. It's really now going to focus on really taking more of a proactive approach towards, first of all, the placement aspects of it, which is the humanitarian aspects of it, but also the enforcement side of it, to those people that continuously push the envelope as it pertains to violations of the law. So we are on board. We're going to do everything we can to move forward. It's going to be a process because now we're dealing with more people than what we were dealing with 2 months ago, but we're on board with it, with the effort.
Commissioner Gongora, your hand is up.
Thank you. And I think we're discussing this again, maybe Friday, I'm not sure. But I understand the challenges that we're facing, but I was copied on a series of emails about the food cards, how many are being given out, why they're being given out, what they're doing. Maria, could you just give us a little explanation as to what this email chain is about and what's going on with the food cards?
Yes, Commissioner. As you know, a couple months back, we were asked to distribute food cards to the homeless because the economy had shut down, and the belief was that because there was no panhandling opportunities, that there might be hunger issues. So we began distributing the food cards. And initially, there were a lot of takers. Then subsequently, they didn't want to sign the receipt, having accepted the cards, because we're using the money that we're planning to get refunded from FEMA. So we're required to have a signature in order to ask for the reimbursement. The interesting issue is that we've been trying to collect the data from the state to assert what we already have in our notes for most of our clients. And that is that the vast majority of our homeless clients are currently receiving SNAP through the state of Florida. So I've already asked the state of Florida to please give us the data on the number of homeless in our city and county that are receiving food stamps, so that we have some idea proportionally to the population if in fact hunger is an issue. I can tell you that I've repeatedly asked staff, not only in the last 2 weeks in regards to the food cards, but quite frankly, from the beginning of this pandemic, did we feel that hunger was an issue or that food was an issue? Not one client encountered by staff has said that hunger is an issue. Not one, which I find a very telling indicator of our population. But in terms of what our issues were with the food cards, sir, a couple weeks ago, as we were distributing food cards, a mass of homeless started to surround our staff. And with a few feet from it, we happened to catch it on video, a fight broke out. Everyone but one of the people that were there did not have a mask on. And our staff had repeatedly asked them to put masks. They repeatedly said no. So our staff felt that aside from the fact that social distancing wasn't being honored and the masks weren't being worn, now there was aggressive behavior that they couldn't safeguard themselves or the people around them. And so repeatedly the issue was that these food carts are now becoming a safety issue for staff because they're being bum rushed as soon as the van shows up to certain areas. From a programmatic standpoint, I can tell you that Dunkin' Donuts, which was our initial vendor because they had locations at North and South, had asked us not to purchase any more cards because they did not want the homeless, because the homeless were not complying to the social distancing rules in their stores. We then moved to Burger King and McDonald's. We had asked McDonald's to reload the cards, to purchase more cards when we first ran out. They have not called us back. We keep leaving messages for the manager and he's not responding to us. And our request is specifically for the food carts. So I think the issue isn't just from the perspective of what it's doing for staff. The vendors we're getting the cards from have expressed a concern. That's the summary.
Let me ask you a question. Do we have masks to distribute to the homeless?
Yes.
Okay. And how do they obtain them?
We hand them out. They can come into the walk-in center and get them as well. I believe the police department also has masks that they are distributing, according to the meeting yesterday.
That's accurate.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm glad to know that. I did want to let you know that on Friday, we were able to obtain a donation of 1,000 additional N95 masks, so primarily for you guys' use, for the first responders and emergency workers. But our fire chief, Virgil Fernandez, has those at the fire station. I was there when they were delivered. And I was able to obtain a small donation to our homeless committee chair, Ms. Navarette, who does a lot of volunteer work out there. So she will be distributing those as well. I think it's important that the homeless be protected. I understand we can give them to them, but we can't force them to wear them necessarily. So that is very concerning. I'm going to accept what you're saying, Ben. I would be surprised to hear that they don't want the food cards, because my experience on the beach is people always want whatever you have to give them. How much is the SNAP benefit? Is that a couple hundred dollars a month?
$200.
Okay. And is that also on a card?
Yes.
Okay. And are they also able to
preloaded?
Are they able to use the SNAP card from the state at Dunkin' Donuts?
They can use it at Publix, at local markets. I don't believe you can use it at a fast food establishment. You can use it for Amazon to order food.
I don't know if the food cards are a good idea or a bad idea, because I certainly don't want Miami Beach to become the attractive nuisance in the entire county for all homeless people. But if we do continue the card program forward, is it possible to switch our cards to be like the SNAP cards, that you can't use them at the fast food places? You can only use them to order at Amazon or Publix or places that people go when they really need food.
Like a Publix card?
Yeah, like, because you said that people are congregating at the Dunkin' Donuts because they're one of our partners. I was just wondering, if we continue the food program moving forward, if we could create it in a way that we take the attractive nuisance away and force them to go places where they can actually get the food, which is the intended purpose.
Publix would be a good location, as there are locations in North and South, which is where we have the preponderance. If we could continue it, I would recommend Publix cards as the alternative to fast food establishments.
Okay, and is this issue coming to commission again on Friday?
I believe we will be discussing it.
Okay, could you look into that a little bit further between now and Friday and let us know your recommendation on the cards? And if we were to do the cards, perhaps what would be a better way of operating them?
I will say, Commissioner, that yesterday at the Homeless Committee, one of the recommendations that you'll be seeing sent via LTC is that they're the recommendation of a food truck to distribute food to the homeless, as opposed to giving them the cards, that perhaps the actual distribution of food itself was the recommendation from the committee if food cards were not available.
Okay, I actually like that recommendation. What are your thoughts on it? I like the food delivery. If it's going to cost the same amount of money to buy cards or to actually deliver food, I would rather see that happen.
I think the question is going to be manpower. What the committee had specifically requested was ensuring that every single homeless person gets food daily. Our staff obviously only works Monday through Friday, and we're doing outreach. So it would probably require us to contract with a vendor who would then make the distributions. And what I would recommend it is, as we do those distributions, that masks be provided with the food as a re-messaging that that social distancing and masks should be used at all times.
Okay. I wouldn't mind. I agree the goal is to feed people 7 days a week, but the food program that I created at Unidad, and now they're delivering the food since they can't serve it in the lunchroom. But I think they're delivering 1,000 meals a week to seniors, but it's only Monday through Friday because there's no staffing on the weekend. So people have to figure out how to make it work on that schedule.
Right. They're frozen meals also, which is what they've been using to stock people for their food. That obviously won't be an option with the homeless. We would have to give them ready to eat food, maybe sandwiches and things like that. But again, my issue is that just from a geographic standpoint, the city of Miami Beach may only be 7 miles long, but finding the homeless takes time. And I don't think that we have the manpower, certainly not now as we're facing pandemic staffing shortages, to be able to do it ourselves, it would have to be a contracted service at best.
Okay. And it is challenging because there are aggressive panhandlers committing crimes such as the one highlighted by Commissioner Minor, and I don't condone any of that. And then there's people that are genuinely hungry that we got to try to find the balance on all of these issues. So I look forward to continuing the conversation on Friday.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Minor, this was your item, but I do see some participants that have their hands up. I'm going to go ahead. Is that okay to open up to the public? Okay. Our caller on the homeless discussion or update was Mr. Carlos Buratini. Carlos, you're on.
Oh, actually, no, I'm so sorry. I don't know why it shows the name of Carlos. This is Valerie Navarrete. Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't realize this is an account that I use for business, so I didn't realize what's his name. I apologize. I'll check into that later. I have a couple of things to say. Hopefully, I will stay on the 2 minutes, but if not, I'll appreciate if you bear with me. I thank you, everyone, for all the hard work you guys are doing. We all appreciate, the community appreciates that. But I have to say, the pandemic is making everyone's job much harder, not just a specific group of people, but all of us. If more personnel is necessary, because we mentioned that at the homeless committee meeting yesterday, if more personnel is necessary, then just hire people. There's lots of people begging for jobs, so let's hire them to help the city staff. It's very sad what happened on 41st Street. It's terrible, but it's very sad knowing that the gentleman, has some mental illness. So we need to make the Lazarus Project a full program and not just a pilot program. I'm very sad to hear that they won't be on the streets for the next 2 weeks. But we definitely have to pay a lot of attention to the mentally ill. We need to do things that we never done before, because this pandemic has shown us that what we have been doing is just not working enough. So we have to improvise. We have to do new things. We need to offer other housing alternatives. Shelter is not for everyone for so many reasons. And the longer we deny this, the longer and the bigger this problem will be, as life has been showing us. It's showing that on our faces for actually years now, and especially right now. I would like to express that in a position where we have been doing that what we're not working, consider hotel options, so other types of housing where they may feel safer. We need to focus on the solutions instead of just talking about a problem. Like Maria said, we mentioned you're going to receive an LTC about feeding them, the cards.
Sorry, Valerie, I don't keep the time. Mr. Roberts, you're next.
Thank you again, Mickey. I feel sorry for the police. If you've ever come into contact, anybody in Miami Beach that lives here has come into contact with the homeless. And I look at it as two separate groups. One that is completely incapable of managing their life, and they're laying in the streets and completely destitute. And they need the state to come in and provide housing and mental health services, and they're incapable of managing their lives. And forcing the police to deal with this every day is insane. And we need to separate the groups into two parts. And the other part is, people that need a helping hand, that are just, emotionally destroyed, but they're capable of picking themselves up. And I think the police are the perfect party to identify that segment of that population. And then I'm personally willing to, adopt a homeless capable person to lift their lives. And the city, I'm sure there are a lot of businesses and a lot of affluent people in the town that were willing to adopt one, and provide them housing, and the city could provide them a minimum wage job, and that, we cover part of it or all of it while they're working, and then we provide housing somewhere like cheap hotel and give them a life, right? So we could separate the two groups and try to deal with the issue effectively. Thank you.
Thank you. Alex Fernandez, you're on next.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I want to thank
the city for the incredible efforts it is undertaking, whether it be the police department or the Office of Housing and Community Services. Undertaking this challenge right now is a thankless and a very important job. So thank you all for doing that. But the reality is, one, this program of the food carts was instituted because our residents were being attacked outside of restaurants when they were picking up their meals during the stay-at-home order. When they were going to pick up their meals, the homeless individuals were violently going up to them. So this was created as an alternative, a safer alternative for safer conditions for residents that help also the homeless. Now, what are then our other options? If the recommendation of the administration is that we not continue the food carts, well, then what are other options that can be instituted to make sure that not only city staff is safe, but also our residents are safe? Because our residents continue staying in our city after 5 p.m. and in weekends. And we need to make sure that safe conditions are guaranteed for our staff and our residents. And so I'd urge you, please continue asking and seeking for what those recommendations are, because the situation, unfortunately, will only get worse once the moratoriums are lifted in our economy. Thank you very much, and good luck with this task.
Thank you. Mr. George Tilton?
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Hi. So what I want to cover is specifically what you were talking about when it comes to replacing the food carts, and that was actually supplying food to the homeless. Now, this actually specifically affects me and the group of residents who gathered a couple months ago and realized that there was a real issue. We weren't aware of you guys handing out food carts, but we were aware of a lot of the homeless bothering and sometimes attacking the residents at their homes or restaurants, as a few of the other people have said. So we got together, and every week, normally it's Saturday and Wednesdays, we make anywhere between 100 to 200 meals, and we don't just stay on the beach. We cover most of South and Mid Beach and work our way into downtown as well. And so I know that in the beginning, there were a lot of people that were really interested in it. Sometimes it's not always the work they put in, but they help with a monetary donation. So when it comes to the issue of staffing, that potential need for passing out the food, I know that maybe you don't even need to take money out of the budget to pay the staff. There are a lot of people who are willing to volunteer their time. We all volunteer our time, food, and money to be able to help with this cause. So I think that when it comes to this issue, there would be a lot of people that if they knew there was a way that they could help the city out by feeding the homeless, it's something that a group of us, sometimes 10, 12, even 15 of us do twice a week, that you would find more than enough people, even during the pandemic, who are more than willing to help in a scenario like that. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tilton. And I'm sure Maria's office will be in touch. All right, Valerie, I know it's not Carlos, it's Valerie. I'm going to give you another couple of seconds to wrap up because you didn't have a chance. You were cut off abruptly. So, Valerie.
Thank you so very much. I appreciate that very much. And I don't know how to change the name here. So, again, I apologize. So, like I said, at the meeting yesterday, we requested that the carts keep continuing and the food trucks is an addition. So we have different things in order to cover all the bases and also in order to cover the entire beach. So the panhandling or the homeless agglomeration doesn't happen on one area only, as it has been happening, because some residents have taken up themselves to feed this community and sometimes they put themselves at harm way. So we want the city to please do that. So, and I also have offered myself, since the police has offered to accompany the staff, the city staff, on the distribution of those cards. They have always been with the staff when they are requested. And I also offer myself to do that job. I have absolutely no problem on going out there, and I don't need police escort to do that either. So please, thank you, and I appreciate the extra few seconds. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, our public portion of this item is now closed. Commissioner Minor, this is your item, and this was on for discussion. I give you the floor.
Thank you. I'll wrap up quickly. Good comments from the public, and I really enjoyed and appreciated the dialogue that Commissioner Gongora had with Marie. And we're a compassionate city. We're making efforts, and we should continue to make every effort we can to help people, to turn people's lives around and help in any way. And obviously, we don't want anyone going hungry. That's not. We are a compassionate city. We're also a city of laws. And what I think I see and many of our residents are seeing is that our laws are being broken, and we need to step up the enforcement. And I've had many conversations with Chief Clements. I know he's committed to it. He's given me his assurances between the police homeless resource team. Some of the measures we'll probably hear about a little later about the community policing, park and walk. We just need to enforce the laws. It's gotten to that point where it's every day I'm getting bombarded with complaints about various issues about the homeless, and obviously this can't continue. So I'll continue to focus on enforcement. We need to enforce the laws. And also I've told the chief, if we need additional tools in our arsenal, we could work with legal, and I'm happy to sponsor items and whatever we need to do to correct the current situation. And I guess just for moving forward, if we can continue keeping this on the next neighborhoods meeting to get an update.
Yes, we will have it on the next meeting as an update. I just want to also keep in mind that what we do here in our city, you know, it's all interconnected with everything else regionally, right? So if some other neighboring cities are taking certain steps in their communities, that could have an impact on what happens in our community. So we need to be mindful of those domino reactions of what's happening, you know, across the bay, to our north, to our south, to the west, to understand better how and what causes maybe an influx in our city, and vice versa. So we always have to be keeping that in our peripheral vision, as I'd like to say. So we're going to have this conversation. Give us an update. I know we're going to be touching on this as a commission body. This was a good discussion today and a good update of where we're at. Next time, maybe some recommendations to see where we can move the needle and what is recommended by staff. Is that good? Okay. Thank you. Our next item, actually, since you're here, Chief, we're going to go right into the item regarding the monthly crime update. It's actually a quarterly crime update right now, I think, because of the circumstances. But we're going to go right into that. And then after that, we're going to go into the Citizens Patrol program, because I think they both should be discussed one after the other. With that, Commissioner Gongora.
Thank you. Before I turn it over to the chief or whoever will be presenting, this is part of a quarterly crime update I have, and there are some comparison charts. But we're in an unusual time in that we really can't compare this time to any other time because we're in COVID-19. So I know that there is some additional language in the item that was prepared regarding emergency powers with wearing of masks, the reopening of Ocean Drive, and other items. I had asked the chief if he could focus on Ocean Drive because that is the big issue in the news. I know from my perspective, I've gotten a lot of complaints. A lot of people are unhappy because we've passed mask requirements and there's not a lot of people out there enforcing them. There's not a lot of people out there wearing masks. So they're asking me why we are passing these ordinances if we're not going to have enforcement. Secondarily, I think we have to touch on the recent incidents and videos we've been seeing of the truly unacceptable, aggressive, and bad, trashy behavior we're seeing on Ocean Drive. Very upsetting, especially in this time. They're fighting, they're twerking, they're running around partying, they're not wearing a mask, and we have to do something very serious. So I would like for the chief to also touch on the new plan he notified the commission of changing shifts to have more police on the street. From my perspective, I want the police to know that they have my support to go out there and aggressively enforce the law, that these images that we're seeing are unacceptable and have to go away. I know that the manager has stopped short-term rentals, but I'm willing to go further. I'm willing to give our administration and police whatever tools they need to fix the problems on Ocean Drive, and I'm waiting to hear from you all what we can do to make that happen. So with that, I will turn it over to you, Chief.
Um,
Chief Clements?
I'm sorry, I was unmuted. I actually have two Zoom sessions going at one time. I'm dealing with the POAT on an issue involving Sergeant Shirley Fagan, who passed away in 1988, and was not recognized as an in-the-line-of-duty death, even though she was in uniform and she was the sergeant of the Mounted Patrol. So I'm trying to get that wrong righted and get her recognized the way I think she should be. But anyway, so I apologize for not unmuting myself there. Major Dose is going to give you an overview, if you will, on what's been going on Ocean Drive. He's been out there firsthand. He's been out here at midnight, and seen the challenges that we've had associated with the mask enforcement and the social distancing issues, and on top of the other things that are going on there. So I'm going to turn it over to him. But I can tell you that number one, this week, based on what we saw last week, is we're stepping up, and as you've seen in the LTC, we're stepping up our numbers that we're going to be out in the MXT, and specifically dealing with the social distancing component, the mask wear. We're going to do everything that we can in order to be able to get people to understand that when you come out here, there are rules and there are regulations associated with that. So that's number one. And then moving forward from next Monday on, we're going to be going to a different staffing plan for two reasons. One, because we have people now, by virtue of the fact that we have been, my opinion, we have been confronting people about these issues. Our officers now are starting to come down with obviously not only positive results on COVID testing, but then also the exposure aspects of it, which require them to be quarantined for a specific period of time. So, you know, we're challenging, we're going to challenge people more. Obviously, we're going to take the precautions necessary in order to be able to go ahead and make ourselves safe. But, you know, on the same note, we're going to go ahead and obviously take a more proactive and aggressive stance towards making sure that the businesses help us out in compliance with that as well. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Major Dose. He can talk to you a little bit about our crime effort recently over the last week.
Madam Chair, fellow commissioners, can you hear me?
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning, all. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to share some of my thoughts and ideas, as well as the chief's direction that we have going forward. We all have been horrified at what has been going on in the entertainment district. It has been an overwhelming number of reckless partygoers just coming down the South Beach doing whatever they want. It has been a challenge because we have been faced with a number of affected COVID staff that have dwindled our available enforcement abilities. This weekend going forward, we have extra staff coming in, as well as we've requested an AOA from Miami-Dade County Police to help us on Friday and Saturday nights, which seem to be our busiest night. Even Sundays and Mondays are starting to creep up on us as well. We have been trying to play catch up with these groups of partygoers. They are not easy to deal with, guys. They are reluctant to do anything. They are not willing to follow the rules. They do whatever they like. When confronted, they become aggressive and nasty. And so we have been a very careful at dealing with these social distancing and face covering. We've been trying to be as relentless as possible without having to start any type of large fights. We have been dealing with issues as we see them. As this weekend proved, Saturday was a huge mission. I came in on Sunday and started overwatching through the camera systems the entire district, and was able to at least try to put out the problems as they started. Required quite a bit of work, and I was the dispatcher playing live, you know, from videos. I was able to CCTV cameras and able to dispatch officers to the hotspots. An enormous amount of people just being reckless, hanging off of cars, things that, you know, we really don't see on regular weekdays or weekends. These are high impact week issues, and we've been seeing them here. With this weekend going forward, we've added 20 bodies from our staff to the entertainment district alone. That is a lot of resources. We're going to add 25 Miami-Dade officers along Collins Corridor to stop the nonsense with the donuts that we have been seeing popping up now. Last night, as an example, one of our officers caught a driver doing donuts at Lincoln and Wash, and he had just completed doing donuts at Lincoln and Collins. For some reason, because of the lack of traffic, people seem to think that this is the coolest thing to do now. It's reckless behavior. If we catch people doing this, we're going to arrest you and tow your car. There's no question in my mind that that could very easily endanger the lives of the driver and anybody standing around that area. So we're not going to tolerate that nonsense. We have been tolerating groups of people. We've been getting on our PAs and sirens and making curfew violations stick. A prime example was last night. We shut down the Ocean Drive. We drove Ocean Drive, and we consistently and persistently told people to go back into their hotels or go home. And we would not leave that group until that group moved on. And we insisted that they wear their masks. Now, this is something that we keep. It's a persistent issue because when this group moves from Ocean, it moves to Collins. So our Collins Corridor group of officers had to deal with that group, and it moved on until they finally gave up. And I think that's the message we're trying to show, that we are going to be relentless and persistent. And if you're going to come to South Beach, you have to behave. There's just no way we can allow this continue to occur. It is quite a mission because it's not just one little spot. It happens on Wash, it happens on Collins, and it happens on Ocean Drive. It is quite, it is just the crowd that we are attracting, which leads to other issues down the road that we have to address. But we will be relentless at this. I promise you that our staff and my captains as well have joined me in being here till late in the evenings early mornings to provide the same overwatch that I did on Sunday nights to make sure that we're dispatching our officers to the immediate issues and not just waiting for a 911 call, if any, to come in. So I promise you that we are committed to this, and I'm not going to let this sit well with our officers are committed to doing this as well. And our messaging has to be persistent and relentless. We're not going to let the city go down the drain. That's our promise to you.
Thank you, Major. Commissioner Gongora?
Thank you for that presentation. Hold on. I'm becoming unstable, so I'm going to move to the other side of my living room. That was the type of message that our residents and me need to hear, because it is out of control, and Ocean Drive has been out of control for a long time. But now we're in the midst of a pandemic, so it's not just the bad behavior. Now we're dealing with safety issues, people getting infected, young people running around partying that are putting other people's health at jeopardy. And this message about persistent and relentless needs to be communicated from our communications department, from our police department, and people need to know the party is not happening in Miami Beach. And I have been, you know, a supporter of trying to make the entertainment district work. But for me, this is about a health pandemic at this point, and we will take whatever actions are necessary to get it under control. And we expect that the police will with this improved plan. But if it does not solve the problem, then we will shut down the street, because we cannot have a health and safety crisis going on in our city. I also would like for either the chief or you to contact me, because I would like to set up, I don't want to detract from your time, but I would like to set up a couple of hours personally where I would like to go out with you this weekend on patrol and get a firsthand look of what's happening there to be able to make my decisions responsibly based on what I see and not from what other people tell me.
Commissioner, thank you for that. And, you know, I think it's, you know, that's kind of the sentiments that we hear from officers that are actually on the street. I think they want the residents to understand. I think there was something that came out yesterday, and you know, again, I, um, the language, I don't think, really represents the true feeling that the officers have. They're not afraid to go out and address Corona. That's not, you know, COVID. Okay, that's not what they're afraid of right now. You know, it's the national sentiment right now where, you know, people are empowered. You know, people that might not necessarily have a good relationship with law enforcement, are they feel as though they're empowered to go up and to initiate confrontation. You know, and they're reporting it, and you know, and officers, you know, I'm just being very candid with you. They don't want to be the next video clip on Channel 7 or CNN. You know, there is a concern about that, and we're working through those concerns. You know, obviously with assuring them that we're there for them. Your statement right now and wanting to come out and actually see what's going on out there is what they want to hear. You know, they want to know that their commissioners and that their administration is behind them. And I can assure you that I've gotten nothing on anyone's end as far as the electeds, the administration, or even my office that would indicate anything other than 100% support. And we're going to continue to do that while more importantly, making sure that they stay safe and we limit the spread of COVID virus amongst ourselves, which we're really seeing a significant increase, you know, over the past, probably the last week or so. And I'm concerned about that. I, you know, again, when you're quarantined for 14 days or 10 days until those test results come back, it's a problem.
Right. And I'm concerned about it too. And I think, I think everybody that knows me knows that I support all people of all types and walks of life and socioeconomic backgrounds. But this has got to stop, and it's needed to stop for a while, but it's escalated because people are getting sick. We are now dealing with an unprecedented time, and the party is over, and that message needs to be out there. And from this commissioner, you have my support to do what is necessary to shut it down and keep us safe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Vice Mayor Samulin.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to Commissioner Gongor for bringing this forward. I'm just going to make a few comments that are very much in line with a lot of what he said. I realize this is a challenging time for our community and as well as for our police department. You know, if we had to create a more challenging environment, I'm not sure that we could. And I want to echo my colleague's support for MBPD. I think Commissioner Minor said it, you know, we're an embracing community, but we're a community of laws. And when the people have to follow laws. And so, Officer Dote, your comments that I heard about when you come to South Beach, you're going to behave. And I loved your use of the word relentless. I think that is entirely appropriate, and you have my 110% support, because what we have is unacceptable, and we are not going to stand for it, and we need real change. I want to make a couple, just first a question. One of the images that I'm terribly concerned about, and I want to know if MBPD shares the concern, is some of the illegal driving on sidewalks and some of the packs and scooters that are rolling around that I don't think are following the rules. And frankly, I've heard from the community that this is a concern. Has this been a problem? What are you seeing with these scooters?
Commissioner, if I may, yes, it is a huge problem. The many issues that we are is that many times they don't stop, they get away from us, but we are able to get their number because the ordinance that your commission created about shutting the scooters off by calling the rental companies is an amazing tool. Unfortunately, the rental companies have not been so forthcoming and willing to accept our phone calls recently. And we've had an uphill battle with numerous of these, with these rental companies that are not answering the phone because they don't want to deal with the disturbance or the arguments when the rentor comes back and demands that their scooter be reactivated and or their fees be accredited, you know, because they do get charged regardless. When their scooter gets turned off by the police, they still get charged and they're deposited or voided. So I'm assured by the companies that they're telling these drivers not to drive on the sidewalk, not to drive against pedestrians, not to be foolish, but they do it. It seems that they just rent a scooter and they just behave a fool. And yeah. Again, we're not tolerating that.
Yeah, no,
if I could just pick back on that, please. Quick. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Chief.
Not so much that, but I think what ends up happening, there's real consideration here. And by the way, they work very well with us in the past. We would shut them down, and you'd see people walking scooters back. Enforcement of that is very difficult. Number one, especially when they get in packs, you start talking about packs of 10 or 20 of these scooters and their maneuverability. It's hard for us in order to be able to catch them, right? So the one way that we had of being able to stop the behavior was being able to go ahead and call in the scooter number, and they were identified specifically by the shops that they were rented from, and they would shut them down. We could just walk over to them at that point, and whatever the violation was, they could be cited for that. You know, the scooter companies have not been cooperative this time around. You know, when you call there's no way to be able to leave a message. There's no way to be able to go ahead and you know, get in touch with them to stop the behavior at all. And quite frankly, they're putting more scooters out there during these high impact weekends that make it virtually impossible for us to stay on top of. And so, you know, it's not just as simple as enforcement. It's really not.
Yeah, no, thank you for that, Chief, and those comments. I'm very concerned about that. I also think seeing these groups of scooters that are clearly violating rules that are so hard to enforce is a problem. I am going to, what you're saying confirms sort of my thinking. I'm going to bring something forward to the full commission. We need to address this. I think we need to take action. Speaking of action, and I'll leave it for Friday's discussion, my own opinion, I don't believe the barricades and putting a lane of traffic has helped us. I went out to Ocean Drive. I saw people sitting on barricades. I've seen images of alcohol on barricades. I am scared to death of someone falling off of the barricades. So I know I don't want to get into that completely because I think that's Friday's discussion. I do not think that has been helpful, and I am going to bring forward the motion to change that. My final thought, I agree this problem is untenable. I agree that what we have now is accelerated and worse, but let's be clear, we've had issues in this entertainment district now for a while. We've had problems. This is just making it a lot worse. And I look forward, as I believe Commissioner Gongora said as well, to solutions, because I don't just think it's a policing issue. I think we need to think more holistically, comprehensively, because what we have now is not working, and we need real and meaningful change. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Samuel. I mean, Minor.
Thank you. Yeah, it's recognizing that it's a difficult environment for police officers nationally. But on the positive note, as I think my colleagues, Commissioner Gongora and Samlin mentioned, we have, at least I have heard, nothing but support for our police force and their ability to do their job to the best and be relentless. I'll adopt that word. And we're supporting that. Our residents are supporting that. So we're fortunate here that we're looking for that, and we're actually demanding that. I actually wanted to pivot. Good discussion on Ocean Drive, and I think there's nothing for me to add right now on that. But I have been getting, and I've spoken to the chief almost every day about this. I've been getting a lot, and I'm sure my colleagues have as well, a lot of complaints from various neighborhoods about the lack of police visibility. They don't see the police presence right now. I'm partially guessing that it's related to some of the national issues but really when I see it coming from so many different sides, and these are not individuals or community leaders who are coordinating with each other, they're reaching out independently as best as I can assess and telling me the same exact thing they're seeing in their neighborhood. So I've talked to the chief numerous times about that, and maybe he can address a little bit. I guess part of it is staffing, that we have generally 25 officers on patrol at any given time, which is one issue. And two, the ones who are on, so how do we increase that? And I know the chief has worked on something and has distributed that, but I'd like to hear a little bit more about that. And also making sure that our officers who are on patrol are actually patrolling and are visible. And I know the chief is committed to correcting that. And I've told him straight out, if it's not corrected internally, then it becomes a commission issue, and I'm committed to making sure as a body that we get the necessary community policing and to make sure our residents feel safe and that our streets are properly patrolled, not only in Ocean Drive, and that was a good discussion, but throughout our city.
And if I may, Commissioner, once again, thank you for obviously bringing this to the forefront. You know, again, I think it's been said repeatedly over time that this pandemic has caused a significant ripple effect, if you will, with law enforcement for a variety of reasons. But one of the things that we also do, we find ourselves doing, is being pulled to be able to deal with obviously some of the asks, if you will, you know, that have resulted. The food distribution locations, you know, which are fairly constant. You know, we have the beach issue, which is always going to be an issue, especially when the beaches are closed. You know, having to redeploy people, you know, to various parts of the city when the demonstrations were at their height, you know, is a lot of the reasons that, you know, I mean, our officers are being pulled in a variety of different directions. So as things are starting to settle down, we need to start getting back into the normal day-to-day patrol operations. And that's what you and I have been talking about all week. We are, you know, again, we our minimum staffing is a certain number, but on some days we do have more. And it's a matter of making sure that we direct those resources there consistently. And I think that, you know, you have an opportunity to speak to Captain Campbell about that. He's very much aware of it. And I know that he's right now looking at going and making sure that especially our middle district residents get the type of interaction with our officers that they're really sorely looking for, because they want to see him there. I get that. You know, the other part of that is that, you know, we're filling voids that we have currently in our staffing plan. We have 16 new police officers that are currently in training that we hope to, for lack of a better term, put out into the community, you know, in the upcoming weeks, you know, where they're going to be out on their own, that will hopefully help us go ahead and you know, meet the demands even more. We're going to get back to basics, and that's been the challenge. As far as the staffing aspect of it, yes, we are looking at ways to be able to go ahead and enhance that. We have not come up with an option yet, but it's on the table. And by that, I mean, you know, we're not going to settle for the minimums anymore. We're going to go above that. And we want to make sure that we are in the areas that we need to be at the times of the day that we need to be there, making sure that our residents feel safe. So, again, I promised you that. I promised you that when you took office. I've been promising you that all along. And, you know, now we're trying to get back to a state of normalcy where we can go ahead now and start living on those promises.
Thank you. And if I could just make one last comment and pick up on something Commissioner Samuelin raised about the scooters. I don't know if somebody can address it now, if Eric can address it. I'm just wondering if we can reevaluate our contracts with these rental companies. This is the first I hear of it, that they are actually not being responsive to the police inquiries about violations. I mean, we have an agreement with these companies that it sounds like they are completely ignoring. That is very concerning to me.
Actually, I don't mean to interrupt, but I actually was going to bring that up too. Under the emergency powers, I see that we have the city attorney on the Zoom panel. Under the emergency powers, look, business is tough right now for many people, and I would hate to go this route. But at the end, if you're not behaving or following protocol and the agreements that are in place, if you're a bad operator, we do need to send a message, and for a period of time, they do need to be shut down. As much as it pains me to say that, it's the right thing to do if they're not actually doing what needs to be done. And under the emergency powers right now, if we're seeing testimony that they're not being compliant, that they're not returning phone calls to PD when they're telling them there's an issue out there, that they're violating any sort of ordinance that exists, can't we just shut it down in the meantime? And what are the protocols?
And Commissioner, Chair, just wanted to clarify for the record, we don't actually have agreements in place with these scooter companies. What we have is an ordinance that was passed by the commission a few years back that requires that these scooters provide an identification number on the vehicles so that if something occurs, we can contact them, and they have to have a remote shutoff for the vehicles, and they're also required to collect a deposit.
Correct, but if they're not currently doing that, what are the tools that we have in our toolbox, especially now under these circumstances? Boxner, I see you're on there. I thought I did anyway.
Yeah, no, I'm here. So what's going to happen is if they're not in compliance with the ordinance, they will receive a violation for not doing what they're legally required to do in regards to their operations in our regulatory scheme. And which I believe is happening, if I'm not mistaken, right, Eric?
I apologize. I was having a small technical difficulty.
We know that. Here's what I do know. I know that there have been issues in regards to some of these scooter operators not complying with the ordinance. And in that regard, I know that code has, in fact, gone out there and dealt with the issues. If they are not in compliance, then they will be violated under our code. And then, of course, there will be the appropriate penalties associated with that at this point in time. And is that your understanding as well, too, Eric?
Yes, that's my understanding, is that we do have some teeth under the ordinance as it pertains to the operators. But I'd have to go back and double check that.
And this was, and just so you know, commissioners, this was a, what we're legally permitted to do is to regulate the business operation, not necessarily the conduct of the individual riders. The conduct of the individual riders and whatever they may do illegally would be a violation, more likely than not, under Chapter 316. Chapter 316 is the motor vehicle statute. So if they're speeding, if they're weaving, if they're riding on a sidewalk, all those things that they ultimately do would result in a uniform traffic citation being issued to them for their conduct.
Understood. But if I'm hearing correctly, PD is having a hard time getting a hold of the actual operators and the rental company. Right. And so if there are things that they're not doing according to the ordinance, not necessarily the onus on the rider, which of course is a separate issue that needs enforcement, but if the operators themselves are violating the ordinance by not being responsive, by not doing the things that are according to the protocols of the ordinance, then if we already have those tools in a toolbox, I want to know that we're acting on it.
And
like Commissioner Minor said, it's the first I'm hearing about it firsthand in this manner, but these are things that I find that are frustrating, because we pass all this legislation and then we just need to make sure that we are on top of it and we enforce it, because passing more legislation, isn't going to do anything if we're not enforcing it. And I mean that with the most respect.
And I did get confirmation from our code compliance folks that they have issued multiple violations over the last couple of days.
All right. So I guess we'll have to take a look at that. Major Dose, you may want to see and coordinate with staff, maybe Eric, to see what those violations are. Do we need to go further with that under the emergency powers? Do we have additional leeway that we may not have otherwise had? You know.
Well, I want to be, Commissioner, I'm sorry, I want to be entirely clear. Under the emergency measures and the declaration of a state of emergency are inapplicable to any type of regulation for this operation. It just does not apply. It has nothing to do with the virus. It's something separate and distinct. And if we were to do that, I question the legality of it. So I'd rather not go down necessarily that rabbit hole, only because it's going to create more legal issues than we want to necessarily deal with.
Thank you for that clarification. Commissioner Gongora, you have your hand up.
Okay, wow. I had it raised a long time ago. But yes, please get back to us and let us know, because due to the pandemic, I think that probably we have a little bit more discretion than usual to try to keep people safe under emergency powers. So I'm in full agreement that whatever bad business operators we have that are not complying with the law should be shut down. So I would like to hear back on that, and I think that's important. I also wanted to go back. I think I raised it when Commissioner Samuelin was speaking, just to also highlight that I was also not in favor of those barricades. I know that it's coming up on Friday for discussion. I believe they're coming down. I don't even think Ocean Drive wants them up, the association wants them up anymore. But I was not happy with how those were put up in the first place. And I had another point, but I can't recall because I got into the conversation that as it shifted. But going back to the main point that I don't want to lose from this item is I want to make sure that we stay the course and that we really do persistently and relentlessly enforce our laws and make sure that people know that you can't come to Miami Beach and do these bad things, and that our police do have to be visible. As Commissioner Miner said, I've been out and I haven't seen a lot of police. I'm not quite sure why, but I want to see them out there. We're giving you the tools you need to keep the city safe, so please use them. And I would like to see this item back in September to see how things are going, because it is so timely and important right now.
Thank you, Commissioner. I see some hands are up. What I'm going to do is take these calls briefly on this topic and then go right into the citizens patrol that Commissioner Miner has sponsored. So Alex Fernandez, you're first, and then we'll go back to the commission.
Thank you, Commissioner. And, you know, as a continuation on the issue of the scooters, I'm not an attorney, and you guys may want to ask your city attorney on the availability of the city to suspend or revoke a BTR when there are violations of the city's ordinances. And if memory serves me right, I think it's something that's been done in the past. In addition to that, I'm a firm believer that right now we need short-term solutions, and we also need to look at long-term solutions. Right now, we have a reality that the issues that we're facing today are not being caused by our residents. It's being caused by visitors who do not live in our city. So we need to find a way to limit entry to the city to only residents at the moment, because we are dealing with a global health crisis, and that should be the priority of everything. And if we're not able to do that legally, well, then we need to see what is attracting these visitors to our city. Are they bad businesses that are not operating properly? Well, then maybe we need to go in and we need to start and continue strongly enforcing laws on those businesses. We need to look which are those businesses, and we need to shut them down for the duration of this pandemic as we look for long-term solutions, which include reviewing neighborhood impact establishments, reviewing sidewalk cafe permits, reviewing conditional use permits, cross-checking them with violations, and cross-checking them with calls for services. So that's on one point. And on the other point, anyone who's not aware of the work that our police is doing is simply not paying attention. They're overworked. As the chief said, a lot of them are getting sick, and they deserve our full support right now, because they're out there going from call to call, and we need to thank them and work hard along their side so they can continue effectively doing their work. Thank you very much.
Thank you. John, you're on. John?
Hello, I'm trying to, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes. Aloha, everybody. I'm an exile here in Hawaii. And the reason I left Miami Beach as an activist and a resident is because of the city's failure to follow through with cleaning up Ocean Drive. I was on the mayor's panel for Ocean Drive safety, security, and infrastructure, and not one of our directives has been followed through by the administration. This is not a police matter. This is way above a police matter. Let's talk about the sidewalk cafes, because that's where the city has the ability to move in, because it's at their discretion and at their courtesy that they're issuing these sidewalk cafes. Now, most of the operators there, the majority, are bad operators. They, by the city's own definition, are operating with bad business models, okay? It's called deceptive business practice by the city's own definition, which equals fraud, which equals a crime. And what do? We reissued their permits after they violated multiple code of conduct violations. And then what do? Oh, after the pandemic, let's let those bad operators operate on the street at our courtesy. And what happens? Those locations, not only are they stealing money from tourists, but they are the source of bench clearing brawls, violence. Voodoo Lounge has 301 calls to service since 2018. Oh, let's let them operate on the street. And what happens? Bench clearing brawl chairs thrown, tables thrown, and the very...
Thank you. Your time has elapsed.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Daniel Seraldo, you're next.
Yes. Hi, commissioners. Great to hear this discussion. Thank you all for what you are doing. Some have asked what MDPL's position is on this. You know, we generally don't get involved in things outside of our historic buildings, but obviously this is having a big impact on the brand of Miami Beach, and it's very concerning. We are convening a working group of hotel owners, residents, business owners, urban planners, and so transportation advocates. And so stay tuned, because we're going to be doing our own internal study and providing you all some recommendations by the September land use. But in the interim, I just wanted to mention just two quick things from being on that street every day. One is the talk about the scooters is so, so critical. I go by the scooter rental on 10th between Washington and Collins daily. It's right outside of the police building. And you just see it right there. There's scooters driving up and down sidewalks. It's a complete mess. Talk to Governor DeSantis if you have to. Shut those places down. You're going to see a very quick improvement in the quality of activity down there. You're going to save the police a lot of headaches. Same goes with the Rolls Royce and the Lamborghinis and the Ferraris with the naked people hanging out outside. Those, we got to just shut those down. It's going to be very quick, very hopefully effective and immediate. And then the final thing is signage. Please, you got a great marketing department. Get some signage on the street, on those side streets between Ocean and Collins. Put a sign, block it off, because you got people going in there and they get stuck because the signage is on the alleyway by Ocean. So let's do.
Thank you. Your time has elapsed.
Thank you. Wayne Roberts.
Mickey, you know, my issue is always economics, right? So the problem really is that assessed values on Ocean Drive are too low based on what they sell at. So they don't pay their fair taxes. Then we lose money policing that street and ultimately almost all of MXE. And so that's an issue for me. And we need to utilize that money to clean it up. I mean, you look at those alleyways, it looks like a slum. And we're not, as a city, spending our money effectively to up the tourist quality that come here. And, you know, I think it's economics. Everything is driven by economics. So we get these operators that are low value, that try to drive profits up, you know, on a gross profit level. And they're really not focused on high-end tourism. And I think the city needs to have a clear vision, not just the day-to-day vision, but a clear vision for the future that's focused on improving the quality of life in Miami Beach. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we're done with the public portion of this. Listen, this morning we're discussing a lot of very meaty, important items to the community. Crime, homelessness, affordable housing. So these require, you know, a lot of lengthy discussion. And, you know, I'm glad that we're taking the time today to really begin really going through that. A lot of these things are systemic issues that we need to really address. And so I know Vice Mayor Samulin has a hard out by 11. So just real quick, he did defer his item number. Which item number was it?
It was item 10.
Item
Madam
10.
Chair. And I just have a quick comment before we leave this item, if I may.
Yep. Of course.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to second all of my colleagues' sort of thoughts and many from the public around the scooters. If there's something we can do today to address that, absolutely. Everything in our power, I think we should do that. What's not able to be addressed from a legal perspective, we need to clearly strengthen. I will bring forward that language to our commission meeting on July 29th, because we cannot let what's happening continue to happen. Second, I just want to pick up on our fine guest from Hawaii. John Dutzman did great service on our Ocean Drive panel. And I think he makes some very fine points, as did Alex Fernandez. You know, operating on our public right-of-way is a privilege, not a right. You've got to be above the bar. You've got to be raising the bar. If you're not doing that, then I'm not sure we should be granting you the permits. And I'm going to bring that discussion forward to the full commission. I know we got other stuff to get to, but, you know, if someone's clearly not adhering to the rules that we've set, I'm not sure they're earning the privilege to operate in the public right of way.
Yeah, well said. Thank you. So Commissioner Gongora, as I understand it, you're bringing this item back in September with an update, correct?
Correct. I'd like to bring it back in September for a follow-up on the aggressive, relentless plan. These are the types of items that I really enjoy talking about.
We caught most of that, but right. I think
I'm becoming unstable.
Yeah.
Right, September. September is good. Thank you.
Okay. So we're going to dive right into a companion item with Commissioner Miner's Citizen Patrol Program. Commissioner Miner, you can tee this up for us.
Thank you, Chair Steinberg, and I'll tee it up, and then we can hear maybe from our chief. So yeah. this Volunteer Citizens Patrol, I had brought this earlier in the year. We discussed it at Neighborhoods in February. The world has certainly changed a lot since February, but I think the usefulness of this item and implementing this type of program has only grown. So basically you take people who volunteer, residents who are civic-minded and want to volunteer their time. That would be under the auspices of the police department, and they'd have to complete a citizens police academy program, comprehensive field training program with the police department. And really what it would allow is for citizens to, on a volunteer basis, to serve several functions, but including high visibility patrols, business districts, and also quality of life issues. If a resident is a volunteer in this patrol program, is walking and sees sanitation violations, code violations, they can certainly be a means to report those quality of life issues. And this is a program that there are many municipalities around the country that have implemented this successfully. The city of Sarasota actually has earned an award from the International Association of Chiefs of Police, primarily because of their Volunteer Citizens Patrol program. And it's a great opportunity for our residents to work closely with our police department and our officers to strengthen the relationship and the bond that our community has with our police department. And it is great. I hear only support for our police department from our residents. And really the complaints that we talked about are, and it's almost, it's actually, to me, it's an affectionate complaint. We want to see more of you. We want to see a bigger police presence. And I think this program only enhances that. The feedback that I've gotten from residents when I've talked about this program, and I've had some time to talk about it since it was first raised in February, but I've mentioned it on social media. I've mentioned it in my newsletters. I've mentioned it in town halls. It's only been positive feedback. And actually, I've gotten some good suggestions as well that I'd like to, I could pass along. We don't have to go through them now. But also, I gave a presentation at the Police Citizens Relations Committee, and the chair, Alex Fernandez, is sponsoring an item that will be on for the July 21st meeting discussion. There was some very good, positive feedback on the program there. And just to wrap up, it really is there's a certain very minimal cost to this. There's a certain uniform. There's police radios, potentially golf carts. But the city administration and the police department is estimating right now $26,000 a year annual budget. So this is a very cost-effective, minimal investment into a program that, again, when in municipalities where they've implemented it, it has worked really well and has really strengthened the ties between the community and the police department. I'll just wrap up. I actually I'm reading a book by Manny Diaz, who's a former mayor of Miami. He wrote a book, Miami Transformed, and he has a paragraph on measures that he took in policing and deterring and preventing crime. And this just three sentences I want to read from here, because he talks about how well the Citizens Volunteer Patrol that they implemented in Miami worked and the impact it had. And this is what he says. He said, "This meant we put many more eyes on the street, including community-based volunteers. People who were previously afraid to talk with police were now helping patrol their own streets through citizens on patrol groups. And engaged and cooperative citizenry is a great crime-fighting tool." I couldn't agree more, and if I could turn it over to the chief.
Thank you. Chief?
Again, good morning again, Commissioner. And once again, thank you for including us in your vision as the superintendent on how we can make the streets of Miami Beach safer. Assistant Chief Acosta is going to talk to you a little bit about, you know, what we put together as far as the program goes. But, you know, one of the platforms that I've taken, and it's a fairly, I don't want to say hardcore platform when I came into this position in July, was building ties with the community. And, you know, I support any avenue that we have available to us, not only internally within our community, to be able to build, you know, the bridges with the various HOAs and the various groups that are out there, you know, that want to have that interaction, but also really for the most part to develop a program that we think is a cut above everybody else. And the commissioner and I spoke briefly about this in the past about it. And I said, I just didn't want to throw together a program that didn't have a solid direction and a solid foundation. We've done that. I think we put together, you know, something that I think everyone's going to be proud of. And moreover, when people look to be the gold standard of these types of programs, they will once again look at the city of Miami Beach and say, look what they do. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Assistant Chief Acosta and ask him to talk a little bit about what we're planning on doing with regards to the implementation of this program.
Thank you, Chief. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Good morning. Madam Chair, Commissioners, I want to thank you for allowing us to participate in this discussion this morning. I just want to thank all of you that have shared publicly your support for our wonderful police department. That public support and in private means the world to our police officers. This particular item that Commissioner Minor has brought to light in his vision for our city falls in line with what Chief Clements has wanted for our police agency in our city, and that is to continue to grow our relationship with the community. One of the things we're most proud of is that we share a fondness from our community towards its police, and that's because of the years and years and years that we've established relationships and continue to build upon them. And this is one of those areas that I think we can move in a smart way in establishing and building those community bonds with having our citizens work closely with our police department and continuing to be the extra eyes and ears out on patrol on a daily basis. Our Citizens Police Academy, which is a wonderful program that we have had over the last few years, has generated a lot of alumni from the program and our residents that are willing to participate and see what our police department does. And that will be the cornerstone of our community, of our citizens volunteer program, is touching base with those alumni and seeing how much they are willing to participate and seeing if they want to be part of this program. We want to build upon those relationships, and I think this is a great way to do it. There's an implementation process. We've thought about this in a very smart way, and we're looking at perhaps about 6 months in duration, and it's just an estimate in putting all of these particular parts of the program together, to include getting the funding, uniforms, training, getting an understanding of how large we want to grow this particular program, a dress code, things of that nature, development of policy and remaining in compliance with CALEA standards and things of that nature. So we want to do it in a smart way. And not only that, but to also smartly collect data as it pertains to the program and how it's moving forward. If there's certain elements of the program that does not work for our city, well, then we're in the business of tweaking and always wanting to improve.
and collection of data will tell us that. And it'll also tell us, quite frankly, are we having an impact on a day-to-day feeling of our residents of just simply being safe? Perception is a huge part of what our residents feel about their community. And I think not only measuring it with the data, but the perception of crime and how it's affecting the community, we want to be able to measure that in some profound way. We're going to continue to research it. We're going to continue to probe other police agencies across the country and their successes, and see whatever we can do to kind of bring it all together and put forth the best program that our community deserves. I think that partnership with our police department will be phenomenal in the long run. Chief?
Yeah, just real quick, if I could just go ahead and expand on just one thing as well. You know, we have a tremendous venue that we've utilized for years, the Citizens Police Academy, and our training unit does a phenomenal job of facilitating that. And they act as our ambassadors. They go out into the community and they kind of educate people on some of the things that we can and cannot do. This is yet but another avenue for people to really not necessarily only being the eyes and ears, but then also the voices, if you will, of the police department and getting out our community policing philosophy. And again, kind of talking a little bit about what the do's and don'ts are with what what the police department can do. So again, this is just another avenue. It's another way for us to be able to shine and really keep our community informed.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Sorry, ma'am. I would just add, when our residents who take pride in their community are out there and they're looking for little things that will improve the quality of life, like graffiti, vandalism, things of that nature that can help us get on top of that and identify those problems. Everyone takes ownership. Everyone takes their little part in building our community and making it that much better. So we're for it, and we thank you for that opportunity.
Thank you. I do see a couple hands up from the public. I'm going to open it up to the public and then bring it up here to get my colleagues' thoughts, and then Vice Chair Minor basically take us to where he feels the next step should be. So one second. Let's see. All right. Kristen Rosen Gonzalez, you are on.
Can everyone hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. It's so, first of all, this is a great initiative. The more eyes on the street that you can get, people who are invested in the community, it's a positive thing, and I'm totally supportive about it. And I wanted to speak on the last item, but what really saddens me is to hear all of you guys demand change and never get it. I feel like we've been having the same conversation year over year. We get some bad videos that go viral internationally. We put items on the agenda. The elected officials demand change, and then no change occurs. And my question to the police chief and the city manager is, what is the change going to be this time? It can't be the same conversation. I was down on Ocean Drive, and it's not. First, I'm going to talk about the public safety hazard. I mean, throngs of people, nobody is wearing masks. There's, open containers in the street. You can smell, I know that marijuana isn't criminalized, but you can smell it, in the air. So we're hosting this massive party. And you would think that at least during the coronavirus, we would be able to shut it down. It's unacceptable. And I know that you guys are all saying, like, we demand change. So the city is demanding change. We're not getting it from the administration. What can you do to really get that change in the future? And I'm doing something drastic and scary, like pulling sidewalk cafe permits. I think that during coronavirus needs to happen. But also the scooter rental thing. It's not just scooters. There's all sorts of bizarre little buggies and other mobile devices being rented to people that are really disruptive. They're driving around neighborhoods, they're blasting music, there's golf carts, there's scooters. I've seen little...
Thank you, your time has elapsed.
Okay, thank you. The next caller is 3058. It's not a full name or a number. You're on.
Next caller. Again, it's begins with 3:00 a.m. Hi, state your name, please.
Gail Durham.
Oh, Gail, your number didn't come up.
Okay. Hi, guys. So I'd like to thank Commissioner Minor for proposing this police citizens group. As soon as we heard about it in my neighborhood, we're very excited about it. We actually got together and talked, and it's a great idea. We already have, you know, regular meetings with the police, and we do like graffiti cleanup, and we would love to see something go to the next level. We love engaging with the police, and this is a great opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. That was our final caller. I know there was a question from a caller to you, Chief, about what changes you see, why this time it will be different. And I don't know if you have an answer for that right now.
I think that right now that the what I'm gathering is the sentiment is that before, I think that there's been a lot of talk, and Ms. Rosa Gonzalez brings that out about, you know, what can be done and what should be done. I don't think that this is solely a police problem. And we've said that for a number of years. I think now we finally have a situation where we're getting not only the police department on, you know, on the page, but then also the businesses out there and as well as the administration who are like, we need to do something now. Now, as far as the overall atmosphere around there, it's really, when you talk to the commanders out there, it's really, and I'm talking about the shift commanders that are out there late at night, their goal is to get the businesses shut down, to deal with the social distancing as best they can, and then at 10 o'clock deal with the curfew. So really it's a challenge because when you're moving people off Ocean Drive and trying to get them to go back to wherever they're either locals or they're staying at a hotel or an Airbnb on the beach, at least they were, you know, you're moving the people from Ocean to Collins to Washington. And it literally has been described like sweeping water. So you have to stay up on top of that. And that requires a great deal of resources to do. If you start pulling people off the street to make an arrest, you know, again, it could be a simple misdemeanor arrest or an open container. You know, that's two people that are going to be tied up for an hour. So really, it's a matter of prioritizing this and making sure that you have the resources to deal specifically with what your goal is. And that is clearing the street during curfew. As it is right now, with the numbers that we have, it takes us almost 2 hours just to be able to get Ocean, Collins, and Washington cleared up.
Vice Mayor Samuelin, your hand is up.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I support this initiative wholeheartedly. I think relentless is the word of the morning, and I sense Commissioner Minor has been relentless. I also appreciate MBPD and their openness and now looking at all the best practices. And if there was ever a time to channel community energy to something positive that could help our enforcement, this is probably that time. So well done, Commissioner Minor.
Commissioner,
thank you. Thank you. I'll. If we're ready to move the item, unless there's any other comments.
No, I'm good. Now, what would you like to move specifically? The entire recommendation.
Yeah. So, well, first, I want to thank the Chief Clements and Assistant Chief Acosta for working with me and being diligent on this and putting together sort of this vision. So I would move to adopt this program in its entirety as outlined in the agenda memo and have the matter brought to the full city commission and put on the agenda for the July 29th meeting for consideration and potential adoption.
Thank you. Do I hear a second for that motion?
Sure. I'll second it. The conclusion in the agenda, though, said they were still researching the implementation of the program. So I do second that, but I'm just curious to know, are they going to be able to have that research back by July? I don't mind approving it, but I think we need to see what the program is actually going to look like.
Can I comment on that, Commissioner?
Please.
Sure. Just really quick, Commissioner Gongora, that was in, I wrote that, and that's in relation to just our continual research on top of what we've already gathered so far to make sure that if there's something else that we can do smartly, that we implement it and we bring it forth. So that research will be ongoing. As far as implementation, of course, that is a policy decision by the commission and by the city. And we await that policy decision and are ready to move forward. But it's just minor research.
Okay, I'll second it. The only suggestion I might make to Commissioner Minor is that you add to your motion that staff identify this funding in the upcoming fiscal year's budget while we're doing the budget process, so there's a placeholder. Otherwise, you might find that when we get to the budget, they'll be like, oh, it's not funded this year. It was for the next cycle.
Thank you, Commissioner Gregor. I will accept that amendment.
Second.
So by acclamation, we'll move that forward. Thank you so much for your time.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Commissioner Minor, I meant to ask this as well. I want to see this happen, but I assumed, but I want to clarify in the record that you want this to start after the pandemic is concluded and not during the pandemic. Are you looking to implement this right away? I guess I wanted to understand the timing.
Yeah, and I think, I think as outlined in the memo, I guess there is a certain training period, there's a certain time period. So we're probably talking about 6 months anyway, and certainly, you're right. We're not looking to put anybody at risk. So hopefully we'll be ready to roll it out and the pandemic will have passed, but we can certainly evaluate that at the time.
Yeah, that was my only question about the timing that I was just going to ask, because it does say in the memo that it's about a 6 month training. I mean, first people need to know about the program potential. Then you need to have people who volunteer for it. Then you need people who are vetted, right? Anybody who comes in is going to be vetted. Then once you have your pool of citizen volunteers, then the training begins. So I guess that's going to be a period of 6 months, you're saying? A minimum?
Yeah.
I could let the chief or assistant chief address that.
Yeah, I think the training aspect of that is that the actual vetting part of it can probably take place by, I mean, you know, a lot of the preliminary aspects of it, determining, you know, who we're going to get into the program can take place fairly soon. But the actual training part of it, we'll have to wait until we start to see a significant decrease in the virus itself. But as long as the people are there, then we're ready to go once the times are changing a little bit.
Okay. And do you have I'm sorry, just one last question. And again, this has already been moved and supported. Just the minutia details, whether I understand, are still going to be worked out through this, because it is something so new, and I really love it. What about the when you're doing the? Do you have a mindset of how many citizen patrol you would like to see recruited? Is there a magic number in your mind that if we go over that, that we'll have to wait for some other time, or do you want to wait and see? I mean, do you have that number in mind of what you would think would work?
I think I'd like to be able to keep it to an area first, and determine. We'll sit down with the commissioners and determine. You know, our recommendations are for a number. We're going to, obviously, as Assistant Chief Acosta said, we're going to reach out to other municipalities to find out how they did it. I think we started off as a pilot program in an area, and then we build on that pilot program.
Yeah.
Talk to the perspective. I think it's the best way to do it.
Thank you very much. And thank you for your time. Thank you, Commissioner Minor, for bringing this forward. And that will be on our July 29th commission meeting for the full body. Excellent. All right. So now, Commissioner Gongora, you had a request about a couple items. Oh, wait. And before, you have a deferral announcement, I believe, because then I want to go right into Commissioner Minor's number 13, because I was asked to take those two together.
Sure. Eight and nine, my item. First of all, eight, we read the item on the UNESCO World Heritage List qualifications. I appreciate our staff for recommending it. I didn't want to just take it off, but I wanted to let the people know that we're supportive of this, that it's a no-go. We wouldn't be able to do it to 2027. It's an item that's not going to go anywhere for now, so I don't want to take up more staff resources, so I'm withdrawing and ending item number eight. Also, item number nine has been pending for 2 years, which is a discussion on electric scooters. And I'm not looking to move forward with it because we're trying to stop scooters, not add scooters at this time. So this is something that we've been discussing forever because we couldn't do it at the state level. Now we can, but we're in a pandemic. So I'd like to continue item nine for 6 months, and we'll readdress this issue once the pandemic is concluded.
Okay, thank you. So Commissioner Minor, item number 13, placement of the left turn signal when traveling southbound on West Avenue to Dade Boulevard.
Yeah, I'll just briefly introduce this, and maybe transportation can pick up on the discussion. So
This is a discussion of placement of a left turn signal when traveling southbound on West Avenue and Dade Boulevard. I actually have heard this from a couple of residents that the visibility is very poor at that intersection. And one resident in particular who was consistently mentioned this to me, which I think is great. I think it's great when our residents reach out and mention, you know, issues that and it comes to our attention and we can potentially act on it. I know it's a county roadway, and so there's some studies and that have to be done, but I'll turn it over to Jose.
Sorry, I was muted there. Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. You're correct, Commissioner. The intersection of West Avenue and Dade Boulevard is an intersection under county jurisdiction. Dade Boulevard is a county collector roadway, so we would need to coordinate closely with them on any changes to the configuration of that intersection, including introducing a southbound left turn lane. Just by brief background, that intersection was reconstructed pretty recently as part of the West Avenue Bridge project. It's configured the way that it is, and it looks the way that it looks based on traffic studies that were done probably close to a decade ago now, when the West Avenue Bridge was in the project development and environment phase close to a decade ago. So we'll be happy to look at that intersection. What we propose is to conduct an in-house, very high-level sort of feasibility analysis, where we would look at the geometry of the intersection and conduct a high-level feasibility of whether or not a left-turn lane could be accommodated, and if so, at the expense of what. For example, there's some on-street parking there that may need to be eliminated in order to create room for a left-turn lane. So we could do that in analysis pretty quickly in-house, I would say within the next 60 to 90 days, come back to this committee with our initial recommendations. And if it's the will of this committee and the commission to move that initiative forward, then we would need to work very closely with the county, in which case we would probably request that the county really take the lead on doing the traffic analysis that would be required for that intersection. And obviously in the midst of a pandemic now, with volumes not being what they normally are, we're in a little bit of a conundrum. So most likely the county will want to wait for traffic volumes to normalize before they go out there to do a traffic study to determine if that southbound left turn lane is warranted.
I don't know if
Commissioner
Sandberg's there or not. Commissioner, did you have a suggestion or a motion you'd like to propose?
Jose, how long does the county's study take?
Well, we're not sure yet, Commissioner. First, we would need to do our in-house feasibility analysis. That would be, I would say, 60 days. Within 90 days, we could certainly come back to this body with a initial preliminary recommendation as to whether it is feasible. And then the next step would then be engaging the county. And we have not engaged the county as yet. That would be the second step.
It seems like it makes sense if everyone is in agreement to bring this back maybe for the October neighborhoods meeting.
Okay, I'll second that motion, so it will pass by acclamation.
Great.
I think Commissioner Sandberg has passed. Thank you. I'm sure she'll end up being a yes. I think there's three items left. And I guess I'm going to call my item number 5 on cleanliness. I think this should be a short informational item. This is just a recurring item on the agenda due to the pandemic. I think we're probably having less of an issue with cleanliness than normal, but maybe someone from administration can briefly take us through this item. Thank you, Madam Chair. You're back. I took the opportunity to call. Oh, and I'm not even the vice chair. I'm stepping on Commissioner Miner's toes. Sorry.
You were doing such a great job. It's okay.
I used to be the vice chair of this committee. I forgot which ones I'm vice chair on or not. So I completely apologize.
No worries.
Oh, I have to step off of this, so you can continue my item if you'd like. I'm stepping away from.
Brad, did you want to address item number five?
Yes, certainly. Certainly. Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioner Samuel M. Gongora and Minor. I thought it probably best appropriate to start off just with an introduction, since I have not had the pleasure of interacting with any of the commissioners so far. But my name is Bradford Kane, and I am the city's sanitation director. And I've been here for about 6 months. It's been a very challenging time, and I've been asked to give a report this morning just kind of on the activities of what sanitation has been doing, you know, basically for the last 6 months and this fiscal year. You know, so with that said, I'd like to just start off with just a little bit of positive things with regards to our 2019 residential survey, where we had results that showed 58% of the residents rated cleanliness of our streets. In business and commercial areas are in excellent or good shape. 46 of them rated the conditions of the streets as excellent or good as well. And nearly 70% of the residents rated the cleanliness of the streets in our neighborhoods as excellent or good. You know, certainly those are positive numbers, but, you know, I have high expectations and look to certainly increase those numbers over the course of the next year. And in order to continue to do that, we will diligently monitor the cleanliness citywide in Miami Beach. So just wanted to touch briefly on that. Moving on to our item related to our cleanliness index, we had some really good scores over the past 6 months. Our first quarter to second quarter scores increased over 5%. And sanitation had received high marks as it related to preparing for implementing strategic plans, maintaining cleanliness during highly attended events such as Art Basel, Halloween, Food and Wine, Art Deco, the Super Bowl, and a couple of weeks of spring break. And I certainly got to see it firsthand when my first week was spring break I started. So it was really quite a sight to see how the team all gathered together. And really, that was a tremendous effort by all involved in that. So currently, however, the cleanliness index program is suspended since the COVID-19 outbreak. At this point, that's not occurring, but certainly, you know, staff continue to diligently do our efforts every day to keep the city to those level of standards. Moving on, I just want to briefly also touch on sanitation's response to COVID. We've taken numerous steps since March to protect our employees as well as the public from COVID-19. We implemented staggered work crews and shifts to minimize close contact between our employees. We also provided employees with PPEs daily for use, such as masks, hand sanitizers, spray bottles to sterilize them all for work and equipment, and minimize spacing rules for the time clocks to make sure we're keeping 6 feet apart from individuals, as well as not allowing more than 3 people in a vehicle. You know, we've been really, really diligent since the outbreak of this happened in March. And staff, I think, has done a really good job in terms of really helping our staff, you know, through this very difficult process. Additionally to that, we've made modifications in our work schedule to COVID-19, where we make sure that we are continuing to cover the normal routes that we have. But at points during when the beach and entertainment district were closed, and we were really servicing that area on a limited basis, we had that crew then help out in other areas to help our residential little hand crews, and when we were not using blowers as well during that. So it was a more labor intensive operation, and we moved those guys over into residential areas to help with that as well. We've also been involved in food drives and with various groups providing food to the citizens in Miami Beach, and our staff has helped in that as well. We've also taken our pressure cleaners, and we've altered their routes to include augmenting and increasing our services to the bus stops and also bus shelters and benches as well. So we've been very, you know, diligent in working with our staff to make sure that they continue to provide the service levels that Miami Beach expects, and particularly with Lincoln Road having, you know, no traffic at a fair amount of points during the COVID-19 closures, you know, we really emphasize to our pressure washing guys the importance of the bus shelters and bus benches as well. So in addition, we've also been really inundated with issues from code enforcement. We've had a lot more violations and removal of illegal dumping, as well as an increase from the police department as well in residential areas to remedy situations relating to homelessness and homelessness type activities. So, you know, throughout this, our staff really has been working extremely hard, and just, you know, our operations management team has done a great job in terms of moving around our staff to make sure, you know, nothing was, you know, not getting touched in the city, despite a lot of the direct effects we're having from it, which I'll get into in a second. Sanitation has certainly felt pretty strong cases of COVID over the last, you know, 2-3 weeks. We've had 13 positive cases, 25 close contacts, meaning all those people who had tested positive, 25 additional employees come in contact with them. So they've been out, and 4 accommodations, which HR has granted as well. So during this period of time recently, we were able to hire, we got 6 out of the 10 temporary employees we asked for to assist us with our day-to-day operations, particularly in our hotspot areas like the Entertainment District and Ocean Drive. So we've really been, you know, working with basically at a staff level of under 100 employees a day. So it's been quite a challenge, you know, for us. But I just want to say overall, I think that the entire division has done an outstanding job during this time. And it's been challenging. We've really been challenged, you know, from some of the issues related to COVID. And as we get into the budget 2021, you know, we expect, you know, some additional reductions due to financial impacts as well, which, you know, we'll talk more about on Friday as well. But, you know, certainly it's been challenging the last, you know, 2-3 months, but I really just want, I can't emphasize enough, you know, how well a job staff has done in adapting to all of these changes relative to COVID-19 and the things that we've been faced with, you know, on a day-to-day basis. But it's been very positive in terms of the way we've reacted and handled these things. That's all. I'll take any questions.
Okay. I think we're good. The sponsor, of course, I'm not sure did he mention if he wanted this to come back at any point, or is this an item that can be done via LTC quarterly?
There was no mention from the sponsor, so.
Let's do this as an LTC quarterly. Unless the sponsor has an objection to that, he'll let us know and bring it back himself. Because I know this was a standing recurring item, correct?
Right.
So. Okay. Is that good?
Sounds good.
Okay, so done with that. We have a couple more minutes before we have to adjourn. So let's take, what do we have left? 11 and 12, is that it?
That's it.
All right, so let's do number 11.
I don't know.
Potential pilot.
Barbie is on. I don't know if John is on from Parks. Oh, Cindy's on. Okay.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. This is Cindy Casanova, Assistant Director for the Parks and Recreation Department. This item will be a presentation by a company called Paddle, whose representative Andres Avello should also be on this meeting now. Paddle is a self-serve paddle sport rental platform that allows people to rent paddle boards and kayaks from their mobile phones from strategically located paddle stations. As you'll see in the presentation, Paddle has had a successful implementation in Key Biscayne, and they're looking to provide similar services here in Miami Beach with pilot sites potentially at the Parkview Park Annex and the Pine Tree Park kayak launches. So with that, I believe we have Andres on, and I will turn the presentation over to him.
Before you do, I just have a quick question. Right now, during the pandemic, are we accounting for that because of what we can and can't be doing and what all that entails? And when he does his presentation, I just want to know that.
Yeah, absolutely. We're in no hurry to roll this out. Like I said, this is just a presentation. And as you know, once we go through the presentation, I'm happy to take any questions. But we're not in a hurry to roll this out just yet.
Thank you, Cindy. And hi, everyone. Thank you for taking the time to listen to us. And my name is Andres Abello. I'm one of the founders of Paddle. I know that we're a little bit on a time crunch, so I'll go fairly quickly. But Paddle is a self-serve paddle sport rental platform. It's very similar to City Bike, unlike the scooters and all the nuances with the freestanding scooters. We're actually a station-based platform. So all of our equipment will go back to its place, and that's how the users and are able to end their rentals. Paddle is designed with a resident first mindset, whereas traditional water sport rental concessions that are and almost on every other mile in Miami Beach, you're able to see the pricing started around $30 per hour and even higher at some other locations. We aim to keep that pricing model low through a $20 per month membership, $180 annual membership, or $15 per hour rates for those that don't want to sign up for a subscription. Our goal is to make the water access points that the city has to offer accessible and provide a frequent use activity at really people's hands, making it a very easy item to use. In terms of COVID, we have really improved our processes to deal with it. We're cleaning and disinfecting our equipment frequently. As a team, we're wearing gloves while handling equipment. We are wearing face masks. We're supplying hand sanitizer to the paddle team. For riders to protect themselves, we are promoting face protection and UV gloves that is readily available. Unlike the scooters and other shared spaces and shared use items that a city may offer, our equipment goes into the salt water, which effectively does remove the likeliness of passing COVID from one person to another. But also to further prevent, we recommend gloves and face masks. Well, our goal is really to start off a small pilot with the city of Miami Beach. There's two specific locations where kayak launches are already present, that being at the Parkview Park Annex and Pine Tree Park Kayak Launch. Eventually, we'd like to move to a wider array of locations, and that be more post-COVID. We've identified approximately 15 different sites where we believe that it could add value. In terms of installation, my company will cover all costs of installation, operation, and anything that has to do with the operation. And we'll provide a 20% revenue share for allowing us to operate in your space. Obviously, we will abide by any code that is presented by the committee and the council, current and at the time of operation. And we just want to see how we can make this work. We're happy to provide a service. We want to make the water more accessible to residents, and seeing how we can best purpose this project to accomplish those tasks.
All right. There's a lot to unpack here in terms of what we want to do, and I'll let my colleagues decide, you know, what direction we want to go in. I'll just say I tend to not just want to favor one company over another if there's interest for this, and we even want to go down this road of exploring potential commercialization uses of kayak launches, then which in some areas may have merit, then, you know, I'm a strong proponent of going and seeing what's actually out in the market and understanding all the different models that are out there. But that's, again, if we have to decide if we're a go or no go, and then if we're a go, how do we go? So I'll leave my lovely colleagues up there to give me their ideas. Commissioner Gongora, I see you looking very pensive.
Thank you. Yeah, I missed the intro. I apologize. I had to step away. But I think it's a cool concept. I mean, I think paddle boards are interesting, and I like it. I share your concern. I'm not a big fan of pilot programs for one company, unless you're the only provider in town. I don't know if Eric had an opportunity to look into it since my briefing, but I asked, you know, if you're the only company, then I don't mind working with you. But if there's multiple companies operating throughout the community, then I'd rather open it up to a bid, number one. Number two, I would like to try this, but I would like to try this after the pandemic is over. I'm not really about adding new rentals and things during this time. But I think that the locations identified are good. I think Parkview Park would probably be the most popular to start a pilot in. Kind of open, don't have a strong feeling, but I just want to know from our administration, is this something that multiple providers do in the county, or is this the main game?
Sure, Commissioner. That I am aware of, they're the only company that I found through research. We actually even reached out at one point, this is many, many months ago, to Citibike to see if this is something that they do in their wheelhouse. And at that time, they don't have anything that they were ready to roll out, but they were working on something.
I mean, I think for me, I'd rather defer this a little while till the pandemic is done. And if there's interest amongst companies to bid it, I bid it. If not, I'd give it to this company. And I'd start it in Parkview Park and see how it goes. But I'm curious to hear how my colleagues feel.
Commissioner Minor?
Yeah, I agree with all the comments that Chair Steinberg and Commissioner Gongora made. It does seem interesting. Seems like a nice concept potentially. I do agree that we really want to exhaust that. We don't want to seem like we're favoring one company of another. So we should exhaust all possibilities, whether it be us proactively reaching out, whether posting it in whatever manner we usually do for procurement, and make sure that there are no other interested parties. And if there are, use our usual means to get bids. And I agree with your comments that it's probably a little premature right now based on the pandemic, that we don't want to be rolling this out right now. So, but certainly I think it's something we should revisit in the near future.
And we fully agree with that. We advocate that this would be something that would be done post-COVID.
And I don't see any hands up from the public. So what's the administration recommendation at this time?
We can defer the item. We can readdress it post-COVID, and we can continue to do the research to see if there are other companies that provide a similar service. And if that is the case, then we could potentially talk about going out to bid post-COVID.
Okay. If that's the recommendation, commissioners?
Sure. I think we can do it by acclamation.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you, Cindy, so much.
Thank you.
And then our final item is discussing the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Event and creation of an African American Affairs Committee. Who will be presenting on this item?
I don't know if Heather is on. Yes, there she is.
Good morning, commissioners. This item actually has two sections to it. One is this was sponsored by the mayor at the Juneteenth event. And the first is to have a discussion as to whether we should have an annual Dr. Martin Luther King event to celebrate his mission. So that's the first item. And in the memo, you'll see that we're suggesting that we have a discussion about the type of event that we could have. It could have multiple focuses. It could be community. It could be education. It could be economic. It could be cultural. But this is something that we wanted to get your feedback on as to whether this is something that we should recommend for the city to do annually. Dr. King's birthday is celebrated in January. It's usually the second or the third Monday of the month. So that's the first item. And then the second item is to create a African-American Affairs Committee. We have a number of committees that are focused on specific groups of residents in the city. We have the next generation, we have the LGBT, we have women, and this is an opportunity to create a committee that will focus on African-American and Black issues for our residents and our businesses for the city. It could be an opportunity for these residents to have a more embedded contribution to the city by making recommendations to the commission on things that they see could help the quality of life of our residents and our businesses and our tourists and visitors.
That committee could be created as an appointee from each of the commissioners. We can also include the GMCVB as one of our advisors to the committee. And this could be an opportunity, especially during the environment that we're in, to ensure that the African American and Black community feel embraced and welcome and can make a meaningful contribution to the future of the city. So those are the two items that are before you right now. Saving the best for last.
Yeah.
Would you like to take the first part? Or?
Yeah, I'll ask.
I'm sorry, I thought I saw Commissioner Gongora. I thought you were signaling me. Yeah, let's discuss them separately. I'm the first one is the memorial event. I'm good with that personally, however you feel that we should be moving forward, but I want input. Michael Gongora or Commissioner Miners, do you have anything you'd like to add? Suggest, comment? Yes, Commissioner Miner.
Oh, this is a nice item. I'm supportive. I guess the question, maybe the details are still being working out, but the sort of the event for Dr. King, is that something that we would do on Juneteenth on his birthday? Any thought to that?
Actually, I think that, again, this is something that it was just brought up a few weeks ago, but that is something that we would consider. I would suspect that we would do it in the month of his birthday, which is in January. Juneteenth takes place in June 19th. So I would suspect that we would explore having either something specifically on that holiday, or there may be an opportunity to do something throughout the month. But I think we would take more input on how to have something that would really be reflective of celebrating Dr. King's mission and how that's connected to our city and how we would best do that for our residents and our businesses and tourists. So that's something to be TBD, I guess.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Gongora, I know you're having technical difficulties.
I'm changing my... I'm having earphone difficulties. I went from my AirPods to my old school ones. Okay. Yes, I think we're all going to be supportive. I just had a couple of questions because we typically do the Art Deco weekend on Martin Luther King weekend. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So I guess we just have to find some way to incorporate doing both of these things, and maybe that would be something if and when the committee is created that they could focus on with somebody's help.
Mm-hmm. I think the best thing would be to create an action plan. If you want to recommend that the commission that we go forward, then we would have an action plan and come back to the commission with or through an LTC about what we want to do for the month or the day. Sure. And make sure that it was collaborative and encompassed everything else that is happening in the city.
Wonderful. Yes, I support that. Moving on to the committee, I had a question when I spoke to Eric, because I haven't looked at how other cities that have these committees do them. Have we looked at Miami-Dade County or Miami or Fort Lauderdale or other cities where they may have an African-American or a Black committee to see how they're set up?
Well, yes, I've looked at them, but it wouldn't be set up any different than any of the other councils or advisory boards that we have within Miami Beach. It would be a selection of residents or businesses who have an interest in this community and making sure that community thrives and that they are people who are dedicated and committed to making a difference in the city, and that they would act as we have our other boards and committees respond and making recommendations to the commission on where they think that issues or events or activities will enhance the city.
Yeah, that really wasn't my question, because I agree with you. That's what we do. We would probably have each member of the commission appoint somebody that would focus on those issues like the other committees that you referenced. My questions are not about that. They're really one. Somebody told me that some municipality has one that is only African-American and one has one that is Black that also focuses on like Afro-Caribbean cultures also. I don't know if those two cultures would mesh on one committee, but I've heard that's how one group does it. I've heard another one, it's more strictly African-American. I don't know. if there's any thought on that.
My personal recommendation is that the community, whether it is the residents and the businesses, is significant, but not large enough where you'd have to have that those silos or that bifurcation. I think it, given the environment that we're sitting in now, I think it should be all encompassing. I think if you select people who are right-minded and committed to making sure that the African American and Black experience is enhanced and celebrated in Miami Beach, then they will make sure that it encompasses all of everything and everyone and every type of business that would fall within that group. And I personally don't think that that's necessary for us to make those distinctions at this point. We may get to that point sometime later, but at this point, I think it's an opportunity to put a stake in the ground and say, let's have a conversation.
Yeah, no, I like it. And I like the broader interpretation. I just want to make sure that it will be open to that. And then I guess my last question is, who would staff the committee from the administration?
That would be a decision that the city manager would, I believe, would have to make.
Yeah, I don't think we've made that decision yet, Commissioner. I think we're trying to figure out what the construct of the group would be, and then depending on how that plays out, we would staff it with the appropriate individuals from within the administration. You know, if it's more business related, it might be economic development. If it's more culture related, it might be tourism and culture. If it was more art related, it might be somebody from AIPP. It could be any number of different people depending on where we think that this is going.
Did you have a recommendation, Commissioner?
No, I didn't. I was just curious. I wanted to know what yours was. All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So if all the commissioners agree, then the next step would be to make the recommendation to the commission that we move forward with both, if that's okay.
Yeah, I'm good. Commissioners, any other thoughts or comments? Nope. Okay. Seeing none, let me just make sure there are no public. No one from the public wants to comment. Commissioner Gongora, your hand is still up. Is that intentional or left over?
Left over. Now it is down.
Okay. Heather, we're good. I'm sure you're going to bring us back more details in the future, but it does not have to be back here at Neighborhoods. We can just see it at the full commission. Thank you so much for your time. We saved the best for last. And with that, do we have any other items, Eric?
Nope, that's it.
All right, well, we did it. We did it under 11:30 cutout. So I'm very happy that today was a very good dialogue. I appreciate everybody's participation. Please stay safe, and I'll see you in a couple of days for our commission meeting. Take care and have a great rest of the day. Bye. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.